All right, I've called the meeting to order. Ms. Spencer, can you call the roll? Cliff, you going to do that?
Yeah, I am. Mr. Yanaki?
Present.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Present.
Ms. McColl? Mr. Lucchese? Ms. Fishman? Ms. Davis?
Present.
Chairman Crosby?
Present.
We have seven.
We've got a quorum. All right. First thing I want to do is see if there's any public comment that is not related to the agenda item for the application for the tennis club. Is there any comment that's not related to that? I'm going to move on. So on our agenda, we've got really three things to discuss tonight. Two should be fairly easy or quick to get through. So the first one is the minutes of our July 10th meeting of the Development Review Board. Did everybody have a chance to take a look at that? And it reflects what your memory of what happened at that meeting?
Just noted one thing. It's Carl Beatty, Beade. It's written as Beaty. I think it's just a typo, but make sure it's named right.
All right. You can make that note. All right, I think can we do we need a motion to approve then? A second?
Second.
All right, then moving on to the
Take a vote.
Oh yes, vote. Thank you.
Call the roll.
Can't hear you that.
It's on.
Okay, calling the roll. Chairman Crosby.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Ms. Fishman.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
He wasn't there.
Ms. McColl. Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Mr. Yanaki.
Yes.
Okay. So the next item on our agenda, the minutes of our July 31st meeting, which is a joint meeting, the Economic Development Commission, the Zoning Board, the Plan Commission, Development Review Board, and the Village Board. Does that look? I believe we've been asked to vote on this to approve because we had the majority of members that were there at that meeting. Okay,
Okay.
so we'll
I
need
move
a
to approve
motion.
them.
Second.
Second.
Calling the roll, Chairman Crosby.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Ms. Fishman.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese. Ms. McColl. Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Mr. Yanaki.
Abstain.
All right, so let's move to the next item, which is the application 250012. It's an application to install lights to illuminate the tennis courts at the River Forest Tennis Club. First thing I'd like to do is have the village attorney speak to any kind of conflict of interest.
Yes, we are aware that a number of the members of the board here tonight are also members of the tennis club. And my firm has given the opinion that mere membership in the club does not affect your right to participate in the hearing and or vote on it. You are all aware and have acknowledged the village's ethics ordinance, and you are aware that if you can uphold your duties with regards to this, so as long as you feel that you can accept the responsibility to act without bias, mere membership in the club will not constitute a conflict that prevents you from voting or participating in the hearing. So if anyone feels the need to recuse themselves, though, I would ask and point out for you to do it at the beginning of the hearing so that you don't participate in the questioning process as well as abstain vote.
I'm going to recuse myself.
Okay.
All right. Anyone else? We're good. Okay. All right. So there, if I can tell there's some new faces in the crowd. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to start out just kind of explain the process of how we're going to go about doing this. The first thing that's going to happen is we're going to have the applicant present the project, okay? And then we will hear from the village staff, the consultants, and then we will open up for the public. A big part of this is getting feedback from the public and taking that into consideration. And then at that point, after we have heard from everyone that has signed up to speak to us, we will close the public portion of the meeting. What that means is that we will continue to deliberate up here. You're welcome to stay to listen, but we'll deliberate and then and discuss and then vote on the project. Okay. I also want to just mention that the way we evaluate these developments is that we have a standards for review. Okay. And there are 13, about 13 items here that we use to determine if the standards have been met, okay, and that's what the trustees have asked us to do, right? That's our role here, is to evaluate it based on these standards. It's not whether we like the project or not, our opinions. It's looking at this, saying it doesn't meet the conditions that are stated in our zoning, okay. So I guess that's it for now. I'll hand it off to the applicant to speak. Swearing in. Are we going to do that now, right? For the applicant as well as anyone in the public?
Yes.
Intends to speak?
The whole thing.
Okay.
To those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly make a false statement of material fact to the village in connection with any application, report, affidavit, oath, certification, or attestation. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm you will give true testimony relative to the matters before this development review board?
I do.
They're sworn in.
All right. You guys are sworn in. Great. If you don't mind introducing yourself and tell us about your project.
Thank you. Good evening, board. Thank you for having us tonight. My name is Elias Yanaki, and I will walk through our application asking you to allow the RFTC to add lights to our tennis courts. Before I begin, I wanted to relay a few things, please. First, our application is nearly 60 pages long. Our presentation is nearly 90 pages long. That's all to say that we've taken this process very seriously. It's taken more than 2 years to get to this point. We took a data-centric, data-heavy approach to this request. We ensured we followed the national standards of numerous professional organizations. In fact, you'll see that we don't even meet many of those standards, but that's okay because it's to the benefit of our neighbors. And most importantly, we adjusted our proposal multiple times based on ideas, suggestions, feedback we received from our neighbors. You'll see our presentation is covered with red asterisks highlighted in yellow. Each one of those represent an idea or a request from our neighbors. At the end, you'll see two slides that summarize how extensively we've adjusted our proposal to ensure we're aligned with our neighbors. With that, please allow me to go through the deck. This is the agenda. It's a really long agenda, but I'm going to go as fast as humanly possible. Please stop me if I am going too fast. First, our project goal. We're trying to pursue the opportunity to responsibly and collaboratively add lights to our tennis courts, fiscally responsible and collaborative with our neighbors, with the village, and with our members. Why are we trying to do this? It's really simple. We as parents want to play with our children a very healthy and active sport. We have the same problem on our courts as many courts do in this town and other towns. They're oversubscribed. From 3:30 until sunset, everyone's playing tennis, which is a wonderful problem to have. My hope is that I can push the adults a couple of hours until dinner time so that between school and dinner, parents and their children can play. That's why we're here. We have lots of project considerations. I want to go through all of them. We spent a lot of time being very sensitive to many matters. First, we want to maintain RFTC's positive impact on the community. both inside River Forest as well as surrounding suburbs, both for the members and for non-members. We want to minimize, if not completely eliminate, any light spillage outside of the courts, including, here's our first red asterisk, we're planting, with a really good idea from a neighbor, we didn't think about this, we're planting 36 brand new evergreen arborvitae trees on Jackson Avenue. We're also open to upgrading the windscreen to help with both the light and the sound. We want to also ensure that the lights are used on an individual basis, one court lit at a time, only if the court is being played. We're never going to have 10 courts lit if no one's playing. We want to also minimize the visual aesthetic disruptions, including shorter and fewer lights, poles. We want to maintain the existing levels of both traffic and noise. We want to maintain the current 7-month season, and that's bookended by a neighbor request, April 1st to October 31st. Even if we play before or after that, the lights won't be on. We also want to add here, bless you, to a number of professional standards, two of which being the United States Tennis Association, the USTA, as well as the IES, which is Illuminating Engineering Society. Next, we want to make sure we continue the value that we add to the neighborhood and the larger community. RFTC is the community. We are the neighborhood. We are the neighbors. We represent nearly 400 families, most of which live in River Forest. Okay, we host swim lessons to the public. We host tennis lessons to the public. If we're able to light our courts, we're going to decompress Keystone Courts, which is almost impossible to play a Keystone, which is another good problem to have. Okay? Here's one of many Facebook posts that I pulled on July 22nd, 1 month after it posted on June 20th. By that time, it already had 73 comments, all talking about how impossible it is to play at Keystone. Again, a good problem, but that's because people want to play tennis. They want to play pickle. The park district has activities there. We have multiple schools that reserve the courts. Okay? Lots of people want to be active in this very active town. This is a good problem to have. We have the same problem at RFTC. We're presenting one solution. Okay. About RFTC for a minute. We are a family-focused, family-stressed club. We stress the importance of family as both the community and the society. We're open to everyone and encourage everyone to apply and to join with us. We are a working club. We are not a country club. Every single member volunteers on multiple committees to make the club function. We do not have extensive staff. We have contributed to the community financially and otherwise for many, many years. And we promote a healthy and active lifestyle. We are playing tennis and playing swimming, which are the two healthiest sports that we can think of. Okay, if you don't believe me, here's the U.S. Open right on the courts. It's on the TV. It says world's healthiest sport. Okay, one of the areas we spent the most time is around light spillage. We took that most seriously. Lighting technology today in 2025 is so vastly superior than just a few years ago. Lights today are LEDs. They're anti-glare, asymmetric, indirect light with full cutoff. All that means is minimize light spillage outside of the courts, minimize any effect to the neighbors. Lights now also require shorter poles and fewer poles. Spillage right now, we're able to get Lathrop Avenue to 0 foot candles. There is no light spillage on Lathrop whatsoever. On Jackson, it's a very tiny amount of 0.078 foot candles. We'll talk about that more in a minute, but that's a very tiny amount. And again, it doesn't account for a number of options. One, existing bushes, existing trees, the windscreens, and the new trees that we're going to plant. So in reality, that 0.078, even though it's very tiny, it's going to be less than that. At the request of neighbors, we also did a second photometric study on the existing lights, on the existing buildings and the street lights in River Forest around our property. We found out that every light is higher and brighter than our proposed lights. The existing lights today, if you walk on Jackson Avenue, it's 8.6 foot candles, 8.6. That's 110 times brighter than our proposed lights of 0.078. The max light is on the bike rack on Jackson Avenue by Roosevelt School. It's lit up at 75 foot candles. Two things about that number. Number one, 75 is 960 times brighter than our 0.078 foot candles. Number two, 75 foot candles is brighter than the brightest light in our proposed tennis courts. Meaning if you stand on the bike racks on Jackson Avenue tonight, you will be in brighter lights than you would in the middle of the brightest light in our proposed courts. Okay. One of the reasons for this is that we just have older style lights. It's a bulb, open, no shields on top of a pole. Okay. So you can kind of see that it's higher spillage. Light is good. Light provides safety. I'm just telling you, this is why the new technology is so vastly superior to the old technology. Next, property values. Okay. We're going to talk about why this project should not diminish any property values for three reasons. First, we just talked about the light spillage. Existing light spillage at River Forest on Jackson Avenue is brighter than our proposed project. Number two, recently we've had lights installed both at Keystone Park and Concordia. Okay, neither project adversely affected property values. Average home appreciation in River Forest, according to Zillow, is 4.4% from January 2024 to January 2025. I spot checked a number of properties next to Keystone and Concordia. All of them had appreciation higher than 4.4%. Third, property values by tennis clubs and golf clubs are 15 to 30% higher than not. That's according to the National Recreation and Parks Association. Okay. These are the three points that we're directing for why property values will not diminish because we're asking for lights to be on our courts. We don't want any net increase in noise or traffic. Okay, currently the RFTC is open 7 months out of the year. It's still going to be open 7 months out of the year. And even if it opens 8 or 9, the lights will not be on further than April to October. Our pool today is open until 9 p.m. every night. Okay, that creates much more noise than tennis ever will. Okay, you've got lights, you've got music blasting, you've got entire families yelling and having a good time together. Tennis courts will add 2 to 4 people per court. Third, many members today bike and walk to the park, to RFTC. They do not drive. We have lots of members that drive, but we have lots more members that walk and bike. A couple years ago, we came to the DRB for a beautification project, which was approved. Since that, the bike racks and our whole property has been upgraded to promote more walking and biking. Finally, this allows adults to decompress the time in the toughest, most busy time are right around the north side, which is the school. When the school goes out between 3:20 and 4:45, you've got hundreds of kids and cars going all over the place. If we have the adults playing a couple hours later, that's going to decompress any congestion by the school. Courts in use. Lights will only be lit individually on only any court that has humans on it. If there's no one playing tennis on that individual court, we are not going to light it up. We're also going to have members book courts from the center of a property first before it goes to the Jackson Avenue court. So the only way anyone would ever play at night on the two Jackson Avenue courts is if all other 8 courts are in use, which almost will never happen. Okay, that was another neighbor request. Okay, pole height at 30 feet. We're in line with our existing flagpole. And dwarfed by the 55-foot trees all around the property and the town. We're also going to upkeep our property maintenance, of course. Safety and security. We have a lot of security cameras already on the property. We're going to add more specifically on the tennis courts themselves. We'll extend staff hours until 9:30 so that everyone stays safe. The pin for the lights will be rotated and will be only given to members, so we can't have random people from other places come in and just start playing tennis. All existing RFTC policies that are applicable during the day will also apply at night. For example, we're never allowed to have alcohol on the courts today. Even if this passes, we're never going to have alcohol on the courts at night either. Here's where we adhere to the three professional standards, right? So we're going to talk about the USTA and the IES first. They talk about illumination, wattage, light loss factor, correlated color temperature, and pole height. On top of that, we also are adhering to the dark sky compliance and design, which all of our light bulbs adhere to, which talk about minimizing light pollution, preventing sky glow, which is lights up in the sky, and protecting the night environment, where we talk about residential zone, wildlife habitats, and observatories. Okay, one by one. First, illumination. The standard for our courts is 50 foot candles. We do not meet that standard. We are, our minimum foot candles are 30 and 24 foot candles. It's okay not to meet it because it's more conservative for the neighbors. The wattage, the requirement is 1,000 watts to 1,500 watts. We do not meet that. We're at 400 watts and 800 watts. Again, lower to the benefit of our neighbors. Light loss factor. What this is, and I'll explain it more in a second, but essentially it's understanding that a light bulb loses efficiency over the course of its life. So it says when you use light loss, you use spillage, and you look at efficiency, you're supposed to drop 30% from the light bulb. So if you have a 100-watt light bulb, you're really supposed to do all of your metrics at 70 watts. We said, no, we're going to do it at 97%, at 97 watts, okay? So again, much more aggressive, but that's okay for the neighbors. The color correlated, the correlated color temperature is yellow versus white, right? So it's recommended to be between 5,000 to 6,000 Kelvin. We are at the low end of that, or 5,000, which is the yellower of the bright white range there. We're in line, but on the low side, which is okay for the neighbors. Pole height, 20 to 40 feet. We're at 30 feet right in line. Illumination. Tennis courts have four classes. Class ones are professional. Class four are parks and rec. We are class three, which is high school and private clubs. Minimum requirement is 50 foot candles of light. Zero of our courts qualify. Not a single, our courts are so dimly lit that we do not even qualify for our own class ranking. Okay. Going down to the worst ranking, class four, two of our courts still don't qualify. The two courts next to Jackson are still too dim to even be eligible to play a Parks and Rec. Okay. Again, all good because it protects the neighbors and our town. Light loss factor. I'm going to give you the formal definition. It's the multiplier used in lighting design to account for the reduction in light output over time. So you're comparing light output initial day one versus the maintained level. Again, it's recommended to drop 30% off of the efficiency. If it's 100 foot candles, you're supposed to do all of your light spillage at 70 foot candles. We said, no, we're going to do it at 97 foot candles. Okay, which this means that we're just overestimating all of our light spillage. All of our foot candles that you see are all over what they actually will be in practice, in reality. I personally reached out to 13 vendors. I got bids from 10 of them. We chose the best one, which is here with us tonight, Shine 2. We also looked at solar powered options. However, the solar technology today is not strong enough for tennis courts, unfortunately. Pole height. We had two options. We can go really, really tall at 50 feet like Keystone is, which are not only tall, but super wide. No one wants to see 50-foot poles in the middle of RFTC. So we said no. We can also go super short at 25 feet. Okay, the downside there is it needs 50% more poles. Not only do we have to go around the perimeter, but we have to go also go inside the court in between every net. That's just too many poles visually, again. It's not appealing. So we decided to go just a few feet above 25. We settled on 30 feet, which allow us to stay only on the perimeter, which is great. Super low at 30 feet and in line with our flagpole. Just some comparables. Our pool lights are 15 feet. The flagpole is at 30 feet. The power lines are 50 and the trees are 55. Financial considerations. This project we anticipated to cost about $300,000, all fully paid for out of RFTC funds. Installation will happen in one phase over the course of 3 weeks. We'll do it over the winter. Hours, again, are bookended from a neighbor, multiple neighbor suggestions, April to October. And the time is also decreased from 10 p.m. down to 9:30 p.m. So it's 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. instead of 10 p.m. Some local lighting comparables. Our own pool is open till 9 p.m. Keystone Tennis is 10 p.m. Keystone Paddle is at 11 p.m. Aside from all of this, we're going to have an automatic and a remote shutoff and a master schedule. So no one can accidentally turn on the lights before or after they're supposed to. End time of 9:30 p.m. Again, neighbor request to bring it back to 9:30 p.m. from the neighbor meeting and then since multiple conversations. Also, stays in line with our pool lights, which go off at 9 p.m. We are asking for 80 extra minutes of light. Okay? The 4 months that we have all of our tournaments and all of our 99% of our play is May through August. These are the sunset of every single month that we're open, April to October. May to August, We are only asking for 80 extra minutes. Okay. April, September, October, they increased 2 hours plus. Nobody is playing tennis at 9:30 p.m. in April or October in Chicago. Okay. Nobody. As much as we all love tennis, you're never going to find us out there in October at 9:30 at night. Okay. So 80 extra minutes is all we're asking for. Here's our traffic study request of the Village, a professional engineering firm that's worked many years with both River Forest and Oak Park. It's KLOA. The full traffic study is in the application, but at the end of the day, it says existing roadway systems have sufficient reserve capacity to accommodate the additional traffic, if any. Okay. This is all in line with what we're trying to do with no net increases of traffic and noise. Here's a picture of our property. Here's a site plan. I'll go fast through these steps. Here's the elevation plan. Here is where the pole placement will be. You'll see around each 12 poles around each bank of quartz with each pole having two LED fixtures. So here's the lighting study. We did two lighting studies, 800 watt and 400 watt. 800 watt is for the left foremost quartz. 400 watts is for the quartz that are next, one quart each that's next to Jackson. Okay, all the details. Let me zoom in. The middle is the illumination. The outside is the light spillage. Here's the 400 watt again. Illumination and light spillage. Here's the summary. Okay. We have four streets around RFTC, two non-residential sides, two residential sides. The non-residential sides, we have Oak and Quick, where the church and the school are. Minimum foot candle spillage is zero, max is one, with an average of about half. Please remember that both D90 as well as First Pres Church both gave us letters of no issue, saying they have zero issues with us adding lights to our tennis courts. The residential sides, the more sensitive sides, Lathrop, we have absolutely zero foot candles hitting Lathrop. Jackson, we have a tiny amount. The min is zero, max is 0.1 foot candles, average is 0.078. That's all decreased in about half because we decreased wattage from 800 watts to 400 watts based on a neighbor ask. Okay, again, that 0.078 is tiny, but it's actually much larger for five reasons that we just talked about. The existing bushes, existing trees, existing windscreen, new trees, and the light loss factor that we are much more aggressive on. Okay, so in reality, it's going to be much less than the numbers that you see on the screen. Probably a good time to talk about what in the world is a foot candle. A foot candle is a lumen, of course, right? So it's a measurement of light intensity or the amount of light visible given off by one source. So if you think about a candle, 1 foot away from a wall, the amount of light that it fills up that square is called 1 foot candle or one lumen. When we compare it to the real world, gyms are lit up at 100 foot candles. Offices and auto showrooms are 50 foot candles. Factory floors are 30 foot candles. Parking garages and hallways are 10 foot candles. Existing lights on Jackson Avenue today are 8.6 foot candles, 110 times brighter than 0.078. The max light on Jackson, 75 foot candles, 960 times brighter than our proposed lights. Here's a photometric study on the left foremost courts. Min is 30, max you'll see is 67. That's what I was talking about. It's much lower than the 75 foot candles today on Roosevelt Avenue by the bike racks, which is a good thing. Bike racks, again, lights provide safety, but the 75 there is much higher than the highest foot candles on our tennis courts. This is on the rightmost court, the 400 watt court. Min is only 24, max is only 54, the average is only 35. Again, all less than the worst class, class four, for tennis courts, which is okay because it's dimmer and that's fine because it's for the neighbors. Here's photometrics, visualizations from the top. So here's two options that we're going to do for decreasing lights even more. First, we're going to plant, again, based on neighbor feedback, 36 brand new evergreen trees. They're going to start at 5 to 6 feet and they'll grow 1 to 2 feet a year. Okay, that's how it looks like there. This is how it looks like fully grown. Okay, they're beautiful evergreens that will absolutely block a lot. Okay, and it's very visually aesthetic as well. Here's a second option, which we're not going to do based on neighbor feedback. Neighbors initially asked us to do more, less transparent, more opaque, thicker windscreens. This is how it would look like. More neighbors came back to us saying they actually like walking around looking at the tennis courts. They like the visual of our tennis courts. So we're not going to do this one, but we can if the neighbors change their mind. Okay. Now here it's me walking around our property, right? So here is Quick Avenue, south side. This is where the church is. I want you to please notice the huge trees, the windscreen, and all of the shade provided on the ground. Here is the inside of Quick Avenue, all of the shade provided by the windscreen and the trees. Here's Oak on the north side. All the trees, all the shade, all the windscreens. This is Lathrop. Okay, windscreens, trees, and our parking lot, which absorbs all of the additional light. Jackson Avenue. So here are the bushes that we're going to replace to do the new trees, new evergreens. And you have the big mature trees, you've got the windscreens, and you've got all the shade. This is all of the shade that the current windscreen and current trees are providing. Okay, it's significant enough where it's most of the two courts on Jackson Avenue are completely in shade. Okay, and you guys are more than welcome to see that anytime you guys would like. Here's our flagpole in the middle. That's at 30 feet, same height as our proposed poles with the 55-foot trees around each one. Just wanted to put that for perspective. Here's the lights. Here's the spill control we talked about. Other lights are the bottom right. You see lights, spillage going all over the place. These lights are designed to do the top lights, which you see very little spillage, if any, on the left and right. And up in the sky, which is very important. Here is what dark sky compliance and design lights look like. They light the tennis court and nothing else. Okay, here's a little bit more on the dark sky because this is important. We want to minimize light pollution. We want to prevent sky glow and we want to protect the night environments. Okay, here's what our lights features have. 1, zero uplight. 2, directional fixtures, color temperature limitations, smart controls, as well as photometric planning. Okay, all of our lights qualify for this. Our poles in Keystone, it's 50-foot poles and they're enormous. You can barely put your hands on them around them. These are 2.76 inch diameter poles. Okay. These are purposely thin so that you don't see them that often. These are not Keystone 50-foot poles. Second photometric study that we did because of the neighbors were asking for it on our 3 adjacent buildings. Almost done, everybody. Okay. This is slide 60 of like 75. We're almost there. Roosevelt School, church, and the library. I took these walking around myself around 10 p.m. at night on October 29th, 2024. Two things to please note as I go through these pictures. 1, they're all open light bulbs without any light shields, which means the bulb on top of a pole, 360-degree light exposure, you could see the bulb from everywhere. Okay, that produces more light spillage. 2, these are that you're going to see all of the visible light that's spilled on the neighbor's sidewalk and front property on Lathrop, on Jackson. Okay. These two points are the exact opposite of what we're planning to do with our lights. Okay. Here's all of the lights at Roosevelt. You'll see the open lights on the right side. This is on Jackson today with 2 rows of cars parked. You still see all of the light on the current Jackson Avenue neighbor's property. Okay. This is today. Okay. Here's more light of Roosevelt. Light Roosevelt. Here is the lights that I'm talking about by the bike rack. 75-foot candles again, 960 times brighter than our proposal and brighter than any bright light, any light that we're having on our property. Okay. Right here by the bike racks. Here's the library, the parking that that's fully lit up. Here's the church. Open light on the bottom left, just so you see another example of what an open light with no light shields looks like. Okay, here's the results of the second photometric study that we did. This is a block above us by the school. Okay, you see every single yellow dot is 8.6-foot candles. And number five in the top right is where the 75-foot candles is. Here's our block, Jackson Avenue. Every one of those yellow dots, 8.6-foot candles. Ours is 0.078. Okay, again, I'm not going to go through the slide again except to say this is overstated. The 0.078 on Jackson is overstated because the 5 factors we just talked about, we've already said 110 and 960 like 50 times, so I'm not going to say that again. But we've been very, very sensitive to making sure that we protect our neighbors, and hopefully we're showing it here. Okay, we have letters of no concern from D90 and from First Presbyterian Church. Both of them we spoke to, they have 0 issues with this project, our neighbors to the north and our neighbors to the south. Our RFTC members, we asked them on April 7th, 2024, we surveyed them saying, is this something that you would want to spend time on? Is this something that's appealing? Would this help? Out of our 400 families, 80% responded Okay, that's 316 families responded. Over 90%, 283 families said yes. Right, 283 families in this town are for this project. We had a really productive neighbor meeting back in March of this year at Concordia. The village asked us to expand the invitee list from 500 feet to 1,000 feet. I also posted it on multiple Facebook sites. We had a good showing of 50 residents, half of which were members, half were not. All of the meeting notes and the takeaways are in this application, and many of the changes were resulted of that neighbor meeting and conversations after. We also had to hire a law firm because we wanted to make sure that we were even in our lane, that this is okay to even ask for. We had an attorney letter, and they multiple pages. It's fully in the application. You all could read it, but essentially what it says is RFTC has fulfilled its obligations and requirements to ensure a complete and holistic application and is within its rights to install the proposed tennis court lighting. Okay. Finally, last two slides here. This is all of the things that we've done. We've adjusted based on neighbors' asks, requests, just feedback, suggestions. First, light related. We eliminated all light spillage on Lathrop. Second, we nearly eliminated all light spillage on Jackson down to 0.078 foot candles by decreasing the wattage of the lights to 400 from 800. And we even eliminated some spots because we did that down to 0 foot candles on Jackson. We're planting 36 arborvitaes on Jackson to block more sound and light. We conducted a second photometric study on the surrounding buildings. The data showed that the light spillage from the school library and church are 110 times brighter than the proposed tennis lights. More so, they are 960 times brighter, that brightest light versus our lights. Okay, we adhere to the USTA and the IES professional standards, and we didn't even meet, we failed to meet many of those requirements. But again, it's okay because it's for the neighbors. All 10 courts are underlit. Every single court is underlit for our class 2 ranking. And only 2 courts don't even qualify for the class 4. We used a much more aggressive light loss factor of 97% instead of 70%, which means that we are overestimating all of our light spillage factors. We adhere to the dark sky compliance of design. We decreased our end time to 9:30 p.m. instead of 10 p.m., which results in an ask of only 80 extra minutes. We're only asking for 80 extra minutes from May to August. Okay, and again, we're open to replacing or upgrading the windscreens to block more light. On the sound side, between adding the 36 trees and replacing the windscreen if the neighbors would like it, that would handle the sound. Finally, additional detail, we doubled the notification zone based on the village ask from 500 feet to 1,000 feet. We posted on multiple Facebook sites. We are only allowing lights to be on from April to October. Members are only allowed to book the course center court first before it gets to Jackson. So again, the only way anyone's ever playing at night on Jackson is if the other 8 courts are used. Courts are lighted on an individual basis. We're asking for a 78 foot by 36 foot tennis court to be lit. We are not lighting the entire block. We provided further detail on resident makeup. We delayed the neighbor meeting to March after the holidays. We delayed this meeting until after the summer is over and everyone's back in town. Unrelated to the tennis lights, pool lights. Neighbors asked us to upgrade the pool lights. We did, to directional LEDs. We also are going to be further tilting them down to decrease light spillage. Finally, pickleball. That's the first time you guys have ever heard me say that word pickleball all night long. Okay? Did it for a reason. We are not going to light up pickleball. Second, we've also delayed pickleball start time from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Okay? So pickleball can't be played until at least 8 a.m. That's my rant. Thank you.
Okay. Before go ahead. Did you want to?
Can you go back to slide 59 and just leave it on the screen?
Sure. Okay. All right. So before we pitch it to the village staff, are there any questions from the board at this time that are top of mind that you want to ask the applicant? If not, we'll move on to the village staff, but just wanted to just pause for a second and see if there are any questions. Mm-hmm. Good for now? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, great.
Uh, Good evening. I'm Jessica Spencer. I'm the Assistant Village Administrator, and I'll be speaking to the village technical review that was conducted. So on July 29th, village staff representing from each of the four major departments met with the applicant to discuss the application. And administration, building, and finance department, which is all one, noted that the application should be built in substantial compliance with the approved plans. Those have not been submitted yet, but once they are submitted, if the project is approved in accordance with village code, that they be the project be built in the way that they present that they do, which is a pretty standard statement. The police department and fire department noted no concerns. They did not see how this would affect their current operations. And then Public Works noted that some concerns, which will be gone into some more detail by the Halsey Levine team regarding the light spillage that was addressed at that time. We also collected public feedback from members of the public since the notification of this meeting was made public. I had emailed each of the board members two emails that were provided to me last week. And then as of this afternoon, I received three more. So all five public comment that was provided in writing to the village has been printed and is in front of all of you this evening. So now I will introduce John Halsey and Nicole Campbell.
Good evening. For the record, John Halsey with Halsey Levine, River Forest resident for about 26 years. I am not a tennis club member, but I have several good friends and neighbors who are tennis club members. Elias, congratulations. I thought I talked fast and covered a lot of detail. I now know I have a kindred spirit in presenting style. So that said, I'm going to go through my report. It's dated October 30th. This is prepared both with myself and Nicole Campbell, who is here in front of us at the table as well. She's a planner with our firm. I review for the record, again, I've been doing all the development review for all the development in the village for about 26 or 27 years. So if it's a PRI, institutional use, a private development, mixed use, multifamily, commercial, Panera Bread, townhomes, whatever you name it, I've worked with the development teams, village staff, the DRB, and the village board on everything for over a quarter of a century. And sad to say, kind of scary to say, that's a long time. So I'm going to go through this again, not a member of the club. As with all development reviews that we do as a firm, we do not have a horse in this race other than to provide accurate information for the deliberation of elected and appointed officials to do the very best thing for the residents and for the community of River Forest, not the applicant. So that is the lens through which I review everything. I'm just going to go through my memo. So it's a pretty short memo. Existing conditions and surrounding land use, and there's a sequence and a cadence to going through all this for the record. So it's zoned PRI, that's public, recreation, and institutional. Most of the institutional uses in the village are zoned PRI. The surrounding uses are PRI is to the north, that's Roosevelt Middle School. PRI is to the south across Quick, that is the First Press Church. And then across the street of Lathrop is R2 single family detached residential, so people's individual single family homes. And to the east across Jackson is more R2 zoning, again, existing single family residential neighborhood. As you go up and down Jackson and Lathrop to the northwest, the west, and the southwest, it's again north and south of those blocks, it's all single family residential. Same thing on Jackson. Any use like this, the tennis club, like other institutions, are a special use plan developments in the PRI district. So anytime when Concordia did its athletic facility, its new dormitory, its Christian Early Childhood Center, that all required a public hearing to amend the plan development. When Dominican University put its athletic fields, those beautiful brick parking lots to save its trees, the new science building, that was an amendment to the existing campus, so it required a public hearing as part of a plan development major amendment, as does any institution in the village. So The tennis club is existing. It's been a great neighbor. It's been there for, what, 120 years or something like that. But they are doing a major amendment, and a major amendment requires an amendment to the plan development as a special use, hence this public hearing. They have to do this to get approval, a public hearing. The project description, I can't give it any more detail than what was just had, but the bottom line is they're proposing 48 lights on 24 poles measuring 30 feet in height to illuminate the tennis courts. The previous application said 10 o'clock. Now you're going to say 9:30. So our report says 10. There was a conflict in two different material sets we had. We were told to go with the 10, but the applicant has said they're amending it to go to 9:30. So till 9:30 at night. And I just want to sort of reiterate what's at question isn't the tennis club. Tennis club is there. So it's not about do property values go up being next to a tennis club. It's there. If the goal was to maintain high property values to be adjacent to homes, they wouldn't have to do anything. They could all just go home. This isn't about the existing tennis club. This is about the proposed lights. So when we talk and evaluate all the things for consideration, appropriateness, the neighborhood, the impact, the property values, the everything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not against the tennis club. It's about the proposed light. That's what is being proposed. The tennis club is not being proposed. Lighting is being proposed. So I just want to make sure that we zero in on the lighting as the issue, not the tennis club is great. It's been there for forever. Again, a lot of people use it. It's part of the community, not questioning any of that. So the project description, I just sort of went over real quickly, did have some discrepancy with the applicant's illumination. The village standard for illumination for outdoor areas is to zero 0.5 foot candles at the property line. So less than 1 foot candle at the property line. And the village has worked diligently with every application, whether it is a PRI application for an institution or a commercial application for a parking lot, especially when adjacent residential is across the street, to have the illumination be at zero at the property line or 0.5. And let me just state, aside from the technicalities of aluminum, lumens and wattage and all this other stuff, there's three components to lighting, to think about lighting. It's pretty visceral. It's pretty easy. There's illumination. And think of it as like, is there enough light to read something? Like it's illuminating. It's a glow. It's a whatever. The other one is line of sight. If you're walking down Lake Street and they're playing soccer at Keystone Park, you might be across the street, two houses in, standing in the dark and not able to read, no illumination. You can look up and see those lights. Direct line of sight to the glare or the light source or filament. So that's the other type of light consideration. There's illumination. You can be standing in total shade and look up and see the lights. And sometimes you have to be like, man, that is bright. That's line of sight or glare. The other one is night sky. And night sky is downward. Lighting now is so much better than it used to be. It's now shielded and flat. So there is no lighting going up. So night sky is to keep light from spilling over and lighting up the night sky. So those are the three ways to think about lighting. So I'm going to focus on the first one here, and this is the illumination. And again, the village's standard is zero or a half a foot candle at the property line. The applicant went through and said it was zero here, zero here, 0.78, I think, on Jackson. But those are incorrect numbers. If you look at the photometric plan submitted by the applicant, those are at the back of curb or the street. Lighting levels are measured at the property line. That's the inside edge of the sidewalk. All right. That is not at the street or the curb. That's at the property line. So we went back and looked at the lighting and photometric plan for Keystone Park, the most intense lights in the village, right? They're lighting up soccer fields, lighting up a city block, basically, or a village block. And lighting at Keystone Park, even with all the tennis courts, the pickleball courts, the batting cages, the soccer lights, whatever, all on, it's a 0 foot candles on Lake Street, 0 foot candles on Central. It's zero, even with all those lighting. The applicant's foot candles at the property line is 29.9 on Oak, so almost 30 foot candles. It is 25.8 on Quick. It is 0.2 on Lathrop, so that's conforming, and it's 3.5 on Jackson, still too high. So by the village's standard, the lighting, especially on Oak and Lathrop, but also on Jackson, far exceed the village's standard of 0.5 foot candles. So again, it's not at the street. Developer's impact is first measured within the property it is proposed on. So the lighting standards, and again, just a point of correction, we can double check the photometric plan that was submitted. But again, 29.9 foot candles on Oak, 25.8 on Quick, 0.2 on Lathrop, which is the only one that complies, and 3.5 on Jackson. So if this were to go forward, and I'm not saying it should or shouldn't, if it were to go forward to comply with all the other lighting proposed in the village for such or similar types of uses, like at Keystone Park, they would have to be substantially altered in some way to get them to be the 0.5 foot candles at the property line. So, because as of right now, they don't even come close on three of the four streets. The next thing I want to talk about is line of sight or glare. Directional lighting is really good. And the applicant did a nice job of stating you can lower the standards, but you need more lights. You can have fewer standards if you jack them way up, because the direction, it's like a flashlight. You can get a beam with a flashlight, and that beam holds way out into the night. Like, lighting is good now. But if you look into a flashlight, but it's on, that's pretty bright, right? So line of sight, something at 30 feet high with no shields, you have direct line of sight to those filaments. There's nothing screening that. So line of sight is not taken care of. You have to be, again, in the right places, but I live half a block or a block from Keystone Park and the metro station. So I know what lighting looks like, and you know when it's on, and it's a glare. And even if it's a block away, sometimes you kind of have to squint because the filaments are so bright. So line of sight of the glare isn't really addressed when you're looking up. Like, I'm looking at that light. Nothing is screening that because of its height. If it was lower, I couldn't see it. Or if you can screen the Eiffel Tower with your thumb if you stand in the right place. If I go like this, I block that line of sight. But nothing is blocking line of sight from a lot of the surrounding residential properties. So line of sight is an issue. It's just the nature of elevated lighting. You can't screen all of it. So nighttime night sky ordinance or dark sky, the applications, the lightings they're proposing is fantastic. It blocks out all light from going up, so it helps with the nighttime sky, the dark ordinance. I'll talk a little bit only because the applicant did about the property values of adjacent property. I'm not a financial impact analyst expert, but I've worked on hundreds of such things across the United States. The testimony that was given is pretty anecdotal. To look at Zillow and to say, these property values have gone up over time, even though there were lights across the street, that doesn't mean they wouldn't have gone up more if the lights weren't across the street. So it's really not financial analysis or proof of anything. And the report that claims that property values increase when you are close to, and I thought this was an unusual grouping, tennis courts or golf court, tennis clubs or golf clubs. If my home backs up to a 100 acre golf club, that's pretty nice. I mean, that's, you know, and that's different than an urban tennis club with 24 lights. It's not. So I don't doubt the veracity of the report. I doubt its applicability and appropriateness as a statement of saying, if you're next to a golf course or a tennis club, your property values go up by 30%. I doubt that that's accurate as applied to this situation. Hours of use, again, the applicant proposing now at 9:30 versus 10 o'clock. The pool is open till 9 o'clock. And in terms of lights, the two other biggest lights, I think, on the site are the two pool lights. They are directionally aimed away from Jackson and down. And there's two of them. And those poles, I think, are only 15 feet tall. So it's the poles for and I think they've since been approved, you know, since they were a little while ago. So the pool lights are on less often, they're lower, and they're aimed. They're not straight down like the tennis court, so you can't see them. So much less of an impact. I want to talk a little bit about the impact on the neighborhood character. So you can talk about it doesn't meet the competitive tennis court lighting levels, and that's fine. But that's from a planning perspective. Professionally, I don't care. That's their court. So whether it's lower or higher, I don't care. I look at it from the neighborhood perspective. And aside from lighting standards, and I just went through a bunch at the property line as a metric that we look at, the bottom line is if you walk around out there now, and I've driven by, walked by, and biked by at night multiple times over the last month, it's dark and quiet. The neighborhood, the block is dark and quiet. There is lighting on the school, no question. There is lighting on First Press. It's mostly up lighting to highlight the architecture. It's a beautiful building. And there is lighting for security purposes in the parking lots and by the bike racks. So it's just a matter. That's true. Those lights are bright. They're security, and they are what they are. But characteristically, in a nutshell, the applicant's proposing to light up a village block. For the most part, I mean, the area where the parking is over on Lathrop and the clubhouse building that Frank Lloyd Wright did, that's, you know, there's a little sliver that's over on Lathrop that's not being lit up. But for the most part, they're lighting up a village block for the purpose of accommodating activity. And even if people are quiet and courteous playing sports, which is nice, it's still activity, and it invites activity. The most, when you're looking at residential neighborhoods, the villages holds residential neighborhoods as probably the defining characteristic of the village. The comprehensive planning document and other planning documents talk about the value of the neighborhoods and how they are the DNA of the village. And everything in the plan goes to great lengths to safeguard the character and integrity of the residential neighborhoods. And like I said, tennis club has been around for 100 plus years and is very much part of that DNA. We're talking about the lights, not the tennis club, just the lights. And so that's a little bit of a different story. One of the most, and the reason there's so much language in here about, and even in the comprehensive about controlling light spillage in residential areas from non-residential uses, is because one of the most intrusive characteristics in a residential area is like lighting activity, right? A building's only bad if you're sort of looking at it. Light, you can't escape. So in a nutshell, aside from the numbers that I've listed or the applicant has listed, bottom line is they're proposing to light up a village block for the most part. And unlike Keystone Park, and that was the heavily attended meeting, the thing that won the day at Keystone Park was the public good. And we had people coming here from OPRF, from Roosevelt, from Fenwick, to every soccer club, every baseball club, every softball club, every lacrosse club. Everybody said, it's a public good, right? So the intrusion of the lights on the residential areas around Keystone, the impact on those neighbors was offset, as so the village thought, by the public good of a lit up area that was open to everybody in the village to use publicly. The applicant is a private club with members only use of the tennis courts. So one of the things we have to take into consideration is the impact and change of character on the neighborhood offset by the good or the value of this really being to the members of a private club and only the members. The public good, as stated by the applicant, is that fewer members would then be using Keystone Park. So that's the public offset. Whereas other public lighting that's been considered, there's been at Keystone Park, the only other one really, is a very significant public gain. So again, I'm a little bit parched, so my voice is cracking a little bit. So there is an impact on the neighborhood. And I just want to state that you can get zero in on the weeds and the numbers, but you got to step back and just sort of say, sum up the application. And it's what I just said. They're lighting up a village block so members can play tennis late at night in a residential neighborhood that otherwise would be dark and quiet. That's in two cents going on. Consistency with the comprehensive plan. So that's the other thing. Zoning, they don't need a variation, or they're not exceeding height limitations. Again, they need an amendment to the plan development, which is the tennis club, in order to make a major amendment. So there's not really a zoning issue per se. Consistency with the comprehensive plan. The area is designated in the comprehensive plan for private recreation. So it reflects the 100-year or 125-year use of that property as the tennis club. And the comprehensive plan shows that for that continued use. We don't anticipate, and nor does the plan, that not being there, the club. But there are specific components of the comprehensive plan that speak to impact on residential areas by non-residential uses and the impact of lights. And so I'm just going to read some of these off. And these are excerpts from the comprehensive plan. Protect residential areas from the encroachment of incompatible land uses and adverse impacts of adjacent activities. So I'm not going to say if the village should deem this to be adverse in terms of lighting or activity. I'm just saying one of the delineated things in the comprehensive plan is to protect residential areas from the encroachment of these sorts of uses. Next one is to ensure the quality, stability, and attractiveness of residential neighborhoods. Again, the tennis club itself is a great number, is a great member, and adds to the quality and attractiveness of the neighborhood. But we're talking about, does lighting improve the attractiveness of the neighborhood? The next one is to minimize the impacts of incompatible land use arrangements. And so that looks at different land uses that are adjacent or proximate to one another and the levels of intensity of activity and the hours of that activity in relation to one another. So it just says to minimize those. The next one, appropriately balance the need to safeguard residential neighborhoods and the need for commercial area development and improvement. So this gets at the issue of safeguarding residential character against other needs in the village. It just, the plan is calling that out. So we understand there's going to be uses that are next to each other that might not be ideal. And the plan just says the village's charge is making sure that's a balanced approach. And then it says specifically, commercial lighting, whether building mounted or freestanding, shall provide via fixtures appropriate to the design of the building and site, and in a manner that minimizes spillover lighting, glare, and illumination on adjacent residential areas. So we've already talked about glare, and we've already talked about spillover, and we've already talked about night sky, but the plan specifically says that. And then last one, strengthen our community character, identity, and unique sense of place. The tennis club, as is, very much strengthens the community character, identity, and sense of place. The question is if the lighting as proposed does the same. So these are just things the plan calls out that the village considers when an application comes forward. And it's up to the elected and appointed officials to apply these standards when or considerations when something is being proposed. And again, there's never a black or white yes or no. It's, is it appropriate giving these standards as a decision, as a tool for decision making? So these aren't regulations, these are policy. So in closing, again, the River Forest Tennis Club is a great member of the community, has been for a long time. It adds to the unique character, quality, and identity of the neighborhood and the village as a whole. What's at question is the lighting. And the question is does the lighting up as proposed reflect a public benefit that outweighs the change in character or intensity or impact on the neighborhood? If it were to go forward, there are some things that could be mitigated. Hours of operation could be, or lighting could go below 9:30, and it could be less. The lighting could be removed and not proposed. You could alter some of what lighting, maybe the westernmost or the easternmost ones aren't lit at all at and only the other ones are. There's things that can be done to mitigate it if it were to go forward. The one thing I would notice is you had mentioned possibly putting up like a more opaque windscreen. The only thing I would ask is, and the village has done this in the past, when maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's not, you sort of test it, you beta test it with a sample or something. People think if they don't want to see something, the limit for a fence is 6 feet. They're like, I don't care. I want a 12-foot fence. And so they put in a 12-foot fence, and 2 days later, they're like, man, that's horrible. Like, I can't see over it. As an architect, David would know sometimes strict opacity is the enemy of good aesthetic. I mean, you want to see the other side. And if you perceive it as a wall, it's not. So if the screen were too opaque, all I would say is you may want to be able to look through and see people playing tennis and enjoying themselves and moving and lighting air and something. It's a balance. If it were too dark that it ran that whole side of the block or around it, it almost looked like, boy, what's going on in there? Like, why do they have this giant wall that's screened off? So it's a balance, right? There's no, and I'm not a tennis court windscreen expert, but you may want to put some samples up there at different times to see what that good balance is for the neighbors and the tennis courts, so they don't feel as though they're looking at a block long wall and they can see activity behind it. So this is a thing to keep in mind, but I wouldn't know that till I see the samples go up. So that's everything.
All right. Questions for either the applicant or as a, yeah. Open up for questions from the board.
All right. Thanks.
Same? No? Okay. Is it okay if I talk about it? Absolutely. Yeah. You can respond.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. Elias Yanaki again, if you forgot. Okay, Mr. Hausiel is a super nice guy. I like him very much. He does a lot of great work. I'm going to just point out a couple items that I disagree with, okay, and my opinions, but these are just my disagreements in his analysis. Section 2, page 2, illumination spillover. He incorrectly states the proposed lights exceed the village's standard of 0.5-foot candles on the property line. During the technical review meeting on July 29th, was the first time anyone's ever said anything about this. Okay, I asked the village during that meeting for documents that explain and show the requirement so that I could abide by it. I was told I would provide get those answers. I'm still waiting. Okay, because I'm prepared. I want to try to be prepared. I looked at the village website and the DRB website. but first to know, first to say that I don't know what I'm looking at for. It's a big website. I couldn't find anything. I would like to know more about it. Okay. Even if it is a village standard, I was told in the technical review meeting that the 0.5 is for the residential sites and the 2.0 foot candles is for the non-residential sites. Okay. In his analysis, Mr. Hauziel references the non-residential streets of Oak and Quick, yet he uses the residential standard of 0.5. Okay, it's curious why that's happened. Again, I can't confirm or deny these numbers because I haven't provided any data on this. A few more points. Please remember that we have letters of no issues from both the church and the school saying they have no problems with this project. Also, I find it very curious that the village is able to pick and choose which properties are able to abide by this requirement, right? So I showed my analysis. There's no way that the lights on Roosevelt School at 75 foot candles abide by the 0.5 foot candles. Okay. I would ask the village if they would like to apply the standard to apply it evenly and fairly to every single building in the town, please. Okay. Which means the village would have to say no to 0.78 foot candles. That means that they have to require all the street buildings and the late street lights to be less than 0.078. Okay. My guess is that these foot candle guidance is there to protect the neighbors, which is good. It's a spirit of the rule. Right, which means the only question we have to ask ourselves is, does this project adversely impact the neighbors? And I believe in this analysis that we showed in the 90 pages deck, it's clear that the project does not negatively impact the neighbors. Okay, section 2, page 3, hours of use, incorrectly states that it's on until 10 p.m. At the latest, they'll be on until 9:30 p.m. and only if those individual courts are in use. He also incorrectly states that the courts are going to be remain lit until 4 hours past sunset. As I've shown in my analysis, there's not a single month that the club is open, that the sunset is 4 hours after. Okay, only April and October reach and exceed 2 hours. But again, we know that it's simply too cold to play tennis at night during those months. Okay, the accurate time is 80 minutes, not 4 hours. Section 2, page 3, impact of neighborhood character. He again incorrectly states that the benefit of the project will be to the members of a private club rather than to the public. There is no question that the RFTC serves and is a benefit to the public. The public signs up for swim lessons in our pool. The public signs up for tennis lessons on our courts. Lights will allow members to play at RFTC instead of Keystone. That frees up courts to the public at Keystone. RFTC fundraises multiple times each year to multiple different charities that benefit the public. Okay, the RFTC, without question, unequivocally serves the public, and we are proud and blessed to do so. We are not a country club. There's no $100,000 check that you have to pay to come hang out with us. We are the ones that clean the toilets. We are the ones that serve the food and clean the tables. We are the community. We are the public. Section 3, page 4, zoning. He incorrectly states that adding lights is a major change from current use. He also stated that in the technical review meeting a few months ago. He said that adding lights represents a material change in use to the property. Because of this comment, we paused. We wanted to make sure we weren't doing anything wrong. We had to hire attorneys. Our attorneys reached out to the village attorney, Lance Molina, the village attorney, to discuss the statement. The village attorney immediately disputed it and said not only was it not a material change in use, it was not a change in use whatsoever. Section 4, page 4, consistency with the comprehensive plan. He incorrectly states that the project is not in line with the comprehensive plan. Our application clearly and in detail states point by point how this is in line with the comprehensive plan. Our attorney letter in their attorney opinion letter also confirms that. Section 5, page 4, conclusion. He again incorrectly states that the project will not benefit the public. We've already talked about that. He incorrectly states that this will illuminate an entire village block. Maybe you work with Carl Sagan. I don't know. But at no point will an entire village block ever be illuminated. Again, we're only lighting individual tennis courts and only if that specific court is in use. We're asking to light up a 78-foot by 36-foot court. Moreover, even if all 10 courts are lit up, which I can't imagine will happen often, it is not an entire village block, as he says. He incorrectly states that this will increase traffic and noise. We paid for a third-party independent traffic study that disputed that very claim. In conclusion, we are simply asking for a 78 by 36 foot court to be lit an extra 80 minutes a day so that parents can play an active, healthy sport
with their children. Thank you.
Maybe respond to a couple of
those.
I don't want to get into a
tit for tap.
I'll
respond. Yes, you can respond, but yeah, let's avoid
tit for tap. Material change, that's lawyer speak. I don't talk like that. I never said in the meeting that it was a material change. I said the use wouldn't change, but the intensity and duration of the use would change, and that's a fact. Can't play tennis in the dark. You can now. It's a change in the extension of the use and the intensity use of the site. The light is not used or lit in the evening, and now it will be. That changes the intensity of the use. So I never said material use. That's lawyer speak. I don't talk like that. I never said it was inconsistent with the comprehensive plan. I said the comprehensive plan designates it for PRI. I said the comprehensive plan intends this use to be there as it has for a century. I said, but the comprehensive plan calls out several specific objectives with regard to protecting residential neighborhoods, and I read those off from the comprehensive plan. Those weren't just things I came up with. Those are from the plan. Take them as you want, but they specifically talk about lighting and things that impact on residential neighborhoods. At the technical review meeting, and there were several people there, I don't 2 foot candles or 0.5 foot candles only on residential streets. Never. Standard is 0.5 foot candles at the property line. Nothing else was ever said. Going back retroactively and solving past sins of the village, can't do anything about that. I mean, and a building can change out a light fixture without getting approval. The school can put in new LED lighting and not come to the village to get that new lighting fixture proposed. So village doesn't have purview. I don't have purview over all these. Anything that comes in front of the development review board, you can go back through other applications. You'll see that language in Keystone. You'll see it in other applications of the discussion, specifically at 0.5 foot candles at the property line. So that's been a consistent from the get-go. So, you know, and village block, I even said here that with the exception of the property over on Lathrop, which is not being lit, if there is such an incredible demand for tennis that nobody can get on at Keystone and you have to do this, they're not doing all of this to light up one court. And if there is such incredible demand by members and kids and the community to play tennis, they're going to be playing tennis. So to say this is an application for 80 minutes for one 36 by 72 foot pad, I just think that's disingenuous. They're proposing to light up 10 tennis courts. They may not always all be on, but they could very well always all be on from the time approval hands. So again, I'm not saying the village should or shouldn't approve it. I'm just trying to put on the hat of protecting and interpreting the zoning, the comprehensive plan, the application that was proposed, consistency over time as the village has applied its standards to applications of any kind, and ask the questions that have to be then begged and considered by the development review board and the village board. So that's, I just want to clarify those things without getting into a back and forth.
Okay. Any questions so far? I can start. I've just got a question for the applicant. If you don't mind stepping up. So this discussion about public versus private and the benefits to the public, can you kind of further elaborate on that? As we've discussed, with there's the benefit of the Keystone of kind of alleviating if there is any pressure as far as availability on those courts. But you mentioned about swim lessons. You mentioned tennis lessons. Can you expand on that and the benefit to the public beyond those that are members?
Yeah, I mean, with swim lessons and tennis lessons, public is invited, and they take both swim lessons and tennis lessons. They could sign up in the summer when we're open, just like our members can, as often as they like. We have full junior tennis. We have full, entire summer worth of both swimming and tennis lessons that is available to the public.
Okay. But that requires a fee, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Same with if you apply to Park District, get swim lessons or tennis lessons at Park District. It's the same thing.
So, but using the courts, not in a lesson, that is not available to someone that's not a member, correct?
Oh, so there's a fee also to members. So if I sign up for tennis lessons, I'm paying a fee for those tennis lessons. If my kids sign up for tennis lessons or swim lessons, mm-hmm. I'm paying a fee. They're not free to the member. We're paying them as well.
Okay. I guess now I'm asking beyond just lessons. If a non-member wanted to use a court, that is not available to them at the tennis club, correct?
They can come as guests of current.
As guests, but it's not open to the public.
No.
Okay. I just wanted clarification on that.
Do I have to stand up and do this here?
I can hear you.
And this is where I want to go back to. What's in question is not the tennis club and its current operations. The light application can go away right now. They can just withdraw it. And it'd still be able to provide public swim lessons and public tennis lessons. This application doesn't impact that. So when I said it doesn't have a direct public benefit or public use, I'm not talking about, again, tennis club in general. It provides swim lessons during a few months of the year, and you can do tennis lessons there, whatever. But the courts lit up at night are not so the public can come in and swim and the public can come in and play tennis. So again, what's the question is the application of the tennis lights. If the tennis club's objective is to serve the public, they can go home right now and continue to do that. The application does not further the continuance of a public benefit or use, with the exception of decreasing club members' demand at Keystone Park.
Gotcha. Okay. Very good. Other questions?
Yes. If you insist that October, nobody's playing tennis at night in October and April at 9:30, why are you asking for October and April at that time?
Our club is open. If we're blessed with weather, because I can't tell Mother Nature, right? If we're blessed with good weather in April or October, we all want to play, just like everyone else wants to play. We try to be very conservative, though, and we can't open the courts until after the last freeze. We have to guess, and we close the courts before our best guess of the first freeze. And we don't know when those dates are. It varies lots every year based on the weather.
Question?
Yeah.
Elias, I wasn't at the March meeting because I wasn't on the board at the time. Have you considered, instead of doing for 10 courts, a smaller number of courts to light up, to minimize the amount of light that would be out there?
Yeah, we're open, right? So we have 10 courts and we are not a rich club whatsoever, right? Fees are very low. It's very, very expensive to install lights, and to do it in two phases or do some and then do some, it's too expensive for us. We don't have the financial capabilities of doing it in multiple phases. We're not that rich.
Did you look at the difference in cost and stuff? And that was the conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, it's what, about 30 grand a court. So, I mean, if we're going to spend 300 or like 240, I mean, like we're spending a ton of money. And a lot of the items is the infrastructure that you need to build under the ground to build the lights and the technology underneath you. It's not just the poles and the bulbs are actually probably part of the cheapest part of this project.
Is there anywhere you can see these lights in the near?
Actually one. Exactly. That's a good question. So there's a court in by Northwestern, Evanston, that they have is the closest one that Shine 2 has lights. Exactly, like similar to what we're looking for.
So a lot of this is fear of change you're dealing with.
I don't know.
Changes this, the atmosphere there completely. And we have fear because nobody's seen it. And what they see lights at Keystone, see lights at Taylor Park, wherever. And it's just, we don't understand it. We really don't.
Or we have the bulb right here if anyone wants to look at it or ask questions from our vendor. The light is here and the vendor is here. But
it's still not the same as seeing it.
As seeing it light. Yep. Seeing it live. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Any other questions right now? If not, we can open it to the public to get the point of view from the public. Okay. All right. So I don't know if I even welcome you guys, but thank you for coming. I really appreciate everyone coming to tell us what you think of what's being proposed. There's a couple of requests I have, okay, from you before you speak to us. And that is to be, if you can, be concise, all right? That helps us out just to keep things moving. We want to give you the time to express and tell us exactly what you think. But if you can be concise, that would be great. Try not to repeat what someone else has said ahead of you. Okay. So if Bob mentions that he really likes the landscaping and you do too, it's perfectly fine to say, hey, Bob mentioned the landscaping and I totally agree with what he stated. Okay. That just helps us kind of keep things moving. And the other thing, the last thing I just want to mention is this, if you could direct your comments to the board, okay? We're here, we're the ones that are listening, and we're here to get your input, not the applicant. This isn't a time for you to get into the debate back and forth with the applicant. It's to for us to get some feedback from you, just as we you saw that we got feedback from the village staff and the applicant, okay? All right, so are we just going to go straight down the list, Cliff?
That's what we're going to do.
All right.
First on the list, Jason Jeanette.
Hi, my name is Jason Jeanette. I'm with 706 Ashland. Been here 8 years. I am a lighting designer by profession. I have 25 years of experience. I am lighting certified by the National Council on Qualifications in the Lighting Profession. I'm a certified lighting controls professional. I'm also a member of the Illuminating Engineering Society Chicago chapter. Couple things. From my experience, kind of a personal story, it seems like the tennis club as a whole is not always aware of the impact that they have on the community. For the last 2 years, the weekend before Halloween, they've held a private trick-or-treating event on village streets, going to members' houses. And I've had to try to explain to my then 5 and now 6-year-old why he wasn't able to trick-or-treat, but people he could see were. So I bring that not to scold the members of the tennis club or anything like that, but to say this proposal will have more impact on the village than the tennis club is saying and probably realizes. A couple points for that. There are a number of things in the proposal that are inaccurate. For instance, the standards for lighting in sports facilities. There are 4 classifications of play. The strongest differentiating between those is the number of spectators. Class 3 is defined as facilities with accommodations for up to 2,000 spectators. We clearly don't have 2,000 seats watching a game here. So the proper class of play is class 4 for this application. At the same time, the light level recommendations for both class 3 and class 4 are average recommendations, not minimum. So the 8 courts that are lit by the 800 watt fixtures in this proposal, the average illuminance on those courts is 51 foot candles, which is 1 foot candle over the recommendation for class 3 play. For class 4, the recommendation is 30 foot candles. And those 2 courts on the east side of the block exceed, I think it's 32 foot candles, I think is what was in the proposal. So it is incorrect to say that these proposals do not meet the recommendations for these classes of play. But the eight courts lit with the 800 watt fixtures exceed the recommendations. They are by like 40%. They're very high. I would like to second John Housewheel's analysis of the spill on the property line. It's wildly excessive. Part of that has to do with the way the lights are mounted on the poles. They're mounted at 90 degree angles. So basically the back corner of the distribution coming out of that light spills right all over the place. A couple other things. The IES recommended practice 6, which is the document that describes lighting for sports facilities, does not make any recommendations on color temperature. So the 5,000 to 6,000 Kelvin color temperature recommendations that they posted is not actually a recommendation from the IES. That is kind of industry practice. That does not align with dark sky recommendations. Full cutoff, yes, but dark sky recommends to keep the color temperature as low as possible and no higher than 3,000 Kelvin. Just for context, the round lights in this room, I believe, are 3,000 Kelvin. The squares are 4,000. So we're talking about much bluer lights than what is in this room today. Secondly, the light survey around the surrounding neighborhood, yes, D90 has overlit Roosevelt School. Unfortunately, that is not an excuse to overlight tennis club. That should be a reason to reach out to District 90 to help them reduce their light levels and have less impact on the neighborhood. And then I've submitted details One of the emails today was like going through all this in detail. But in closing, I urge you guys to mark not met on items C, D, and J for your thing. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Peter Krause.
Hi, thanks for the time and the chance to speak. So full transparency, I live at 1347 Jackson, so not immediately around the club, and I am a tennis club member, and it is in my own self-interest that the Light Project go ahead because I chair with my wife the Junior Tennis Committee. I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old that play and love to play all summer, 4 days a week. A lot of friends do. A lot of other parents I see are here who have kids who play in the junior tennis program. A lot of talk about the public good, and I absolutely believe that the Open Junior Tennis Program does that. We had 281 kids go through the program this summer. Many of those, and I wish I had the exact number for you, but I know many of them are from non-member families. We had two big Wimbledon and French Open themed events where there's kids from all over River Forest, also Oak Park as well, and Elmwood Park came and played, and it was really exciting to see that all going on. And certainly the impact as we go to August, September, and October on those kids' ability to play is dramatically limited. They all do the great River Forest soccer programs and cross country once they get into middle school. By the time they come home, they have dinner, they're done with that. There's no way they can play tennis, especially on the five lit courts that we have at town at Keystone. So if I just thinking about this, I drove by Keystone earlier, five lit courts in the entire town. We had 10 more lit courts. We're tripling the capacity of lit courts at zero taxpayer dollars, immediately doing that for all these kids who want to play, 281 this summer alone, and we're growing and investing in the junior tennis program, which again is open to everybody. So I truly believe that public good statement. Couple other things very quickly. In terms of the character of the neighborhood, for us, Elias said it earlier, there are 260 families or whatever voted in favor of this. That's really part of the neighborhood, and the character of the neighborhood is enhanced when children who, let's face it, are city children who live on this grid system, you know, city light version of town that we have more opportunities to go outside and play rather than sitting inside on their phones, when they can go out and play with their parents or their friends, or do even, I haven't talked to Elias about this, but a junior tennis program in August and September would be fantastic. Get them outside more, get them moving. What could be better for the character of our community than kids who have more recreational opportunities that they just can't get today on the five lit courts at Keystone? And if you've tried to book at 10 and Fit down Lake Street in Oak Park in the fall, it's nearly impossible. It's at the dead center of the day. Kids are in school then, and it's really expensive to play there. So I truly think it's great for the character of the neighborhood, great for the public good. I don't know anything about the lighting science, so I'll leave that to these guys, but appreciate the time.
Mark Hosting.
Good evening. I have a bunch of friends who are members of the tennis club, and I hope I still have a bunch of friends that are members of the tennis club in about 5 minutes. My name's Mark Hosty. I live at 712 Lathrop. I look at the corner where they just installed the pickleball court, the world's loudest neighbor. I just went in about a year and a half ago, and please, please, if you give them lights for this, never give them lights for that. It's the most annoying thing in the world. I am one of the neighbors, and I love living next to the tennis court. It's a great thing to have. I moved here. I'm not moving next to the airport and bitching about the airplane noise. I moved here where there are no lights at the tennis courts, and I don't want lights at the tennis courts. I don't know if you saw it on the way in this evening. The full moon's beautiful. You wouldn't see that from my front door if those lights were on. They're not asking for one court to be lit up. They're asking for the right to light up 10 courts until 9:30. Whether or not they're using them, they will have the right if you grant them the zoning variance. They're asking for 80 minutes at most in the fall and spring is what they're asking for. Nobody's talked about the mornings. Isn't the morning opening 6:30? Is that what you're asking for? 6 o'clock? Okay. You play right now without lights. In the fall and the spring, you'll be playing at 6 o'clock in the morning when that bumps into the Roosevelt start times. The Roosevelt, in those 80 minutes, didn't count the morning times. You're only counting that in the evening. Yeah. So in the morning, you're adding those dark hours. At the same time, teenage kids are riding their little electric bikes down the sidewalks and competing for traffic. Come over to my house, I'll buy you a cup of coffee and sit in the window and watch how dangerous this is right now. Now you're going to add more traffic for an active lit up tennis court in the fall and spring when school's in. It's not a problem in the summer because it's 6 o'clock in the morning. It's bright out. That's the sun and the school's closed. Speaking about the neighbors agreeing to have this, the school and the church with zero residents and zero people go to bed there at night are okie dokie with the lights at the tennis courts. I'm very glad to hear that there are no people living at the school or the church across the street from my house. I, however, have gotten together with a couple of my neighbors, and I think somebody's going to be giving you a petition from the neighbors who actually border the tennis club. And without exception, we've got everybody signing no, or they did not answer their door. And I believe you're going to be handing that in. We have a chart with them drawn out in a color-coded chart. Those who live there will be affected. I honestly came here tonight expecting the village board to steamroll over this and give it to the tennis club. And I can't agree more with Mr. Housel on what he had to say defending the values and what the community gets. Now, I know you said it's just fear. This isn't fear. This is where I live. I like to look up at night and see the sky, the washout at night, not the light on the courts. I heard all the loom talks. I'm talking about the cast of when you drive down Lake Street and you're two blocks away and you can see the soccer fields lit up. That's what's going to be my front porch. It's going to be her front porch and theirs all around here. The people who showed up tonight, we're not afraid. We're realistic. This is our homes. We moved here to a dark, quiet community. This is what we wanted and we paid for it. I could have lived anywhere. I lived in Forest Park for 25 years. I picked here because of this. And I ask you to take the neighbors and his recommendations into your minds when you're recommending this. They didn't put in the total hours counting the morning. They only gave you the nighttime hours. They want to expand it during a school time. They've got recommendations from two bodies that don't have residents. Take the neighbors who live closest. When I got approached by a friend I work with, and he said, are you for or against? I go, well, I'm really leaning against. And he pitched me, and he pitched me hard. And I said, well, where do you live? He goes, well, I live in Oak Park. Or 1347, where you live. They're not at the tennis club. And it is the majority of one block that's going to be lit up. Please take your job seriously. Listen to what this gentleman had to say. He's been doing it for 26 years, and I'm putting my money on him. He's got the right ideas. He's not here to mow down the tennis club. It's a great place. Don't let him expand into the night. It's not going to change what's happening at Keystone or the availability there. It's going to light up one block in the middle of our town where people bought houses, where we have kids, little kids. It's going to upset the neighborhood, and it's going to change the feel. And again, I hope the people that are friends with me from the tennis club are still friends with me from the tennis club. By the way, youth speed read great.
Joe Castillo.
Hello, thank you very much. Joe Castillo, resident since 2013, currently at 806 Jackson, so just outside of that block that we're talking about. I am a volunteer for RFYS. I volunteered for the local baseball group for the kids. And I can tell you, as you all know, there are limited public spaces here in River Forest. And so I truly believe that this is an opportunity to help and public good here. Because when I first joined, I was able to get onto those courts whenever I wanted in Keystone. And I think we've all seen the increase in interest in paddle sports over these last few years. It truly is extremely difficult to find any type of court time at Keystone. And this really, truly gives us an opportunity to help the general public here in River Forest by allowing others to use, allowing the members of the tennis club to use the courts during those times. So thank you.
Adam Block.
Thanks for this opportunity. I and my family have been living at 559 Jackson for the past 15 years. We passed up multiple homes in the area when we were looking for the home that we're currently living in. We looked for about 2 years. Multiple homes had issues with traffic and lighting, and we love the fact that our current home is not plagued with those issues. This proposal is not simply about lighting foot candles, but more about what the increased lighting will lead to. And that's more traffic and more noise in the afternoons and the mornings. Discussion points saying there will be no change in traffic and noise are not valid if the whole point of the lighting is to increase court utilization. I heard the points about the neighbors with the D90 in the church. Thanks, Mark, for making that point about them not being there at night at all. It was stated that that it's worth noting that the noise along Jackson is not just limited to the two courts that are along Jackson, but all the courts reflect noise in the entire area. The loss of view due to the light pollution isn't simply from direct lighting, but also from the light reflected from the ground into the sky, which will directly affect sunsets and our dark sky. The proposal limits our property value and directly limits our enjoyment of our outdoor activities on our property. We moved here for the quiet, comfortable character of this neighborhood, and this would directly alter that. Thank you.
Adira Block.
I'm Adira Block from 559 Jackson, and I don't want lights. Here are some reasons why I don't want these lights. I will not be able to focus as easily on things such as homework and reading. I can't go to bed early because I'd be waiting for the lights to turn off. It will be also hard to fall asleep because of the noises, such as honking, the balls hitting the ground hard, grunting, yelling, screaming, and balls hitting the fence. As a 9-year-old, I should be going to bed at 8:30, but because of the lights, I won't be able to go to bed until much later. I need my sleep to do my best work at school, and to not be as grumpy. I also think the lights will look ugly because I saw pictures of what they might look like, and they looked really bad. When I want to see the sunset, I would see super bright lights instead of a pretty peaceful sunset. That's all I have to say about the River Force lights. Thank you, and bye.
Thank you.
Monica Block?
Hi, I'm Monica Block. I am also from 559 Jackson. My husband and I took 2 years to find our home in River Forest. We looked at street traffic, if streets were one way, how many cars parked there regularly, how quiet the neighbors were, if there were lit parking lots nearby or bright signage nearby, and what the views were like. For each of these reasons, there was a house that we passed on, and for each of these reasons is why we chose our home at 559 Jackson. Many of these reasons weren't just preferences for our family, they were non-negotiables. My husband is a physician and is on call multiple times a week, and when he gets called in, he needs to leave instantly. We limited our home search radius because even a 1-minute additional add to his commute can matter. We chose this street because of the low traffic and the low public parking so that he would not be delayed. Members already park on Quick Avenue. Increased playtime would also increase the cars and amount of traffic, which will in turn be a problem for him and our family. Other factors in our home choice were the views and proximity to highly lit areas. I remember homes we rejected because of bright parking lights and business signage. I personally find that stressful and not relaxing. When I look outside from any angle of my house, downstairs or upstairs, I want to enjoy nature and see my neighbors walking by with their dogs and see sunsets and the beautiful views of trees and the uniquely architected homes of our area. I do not think it's relaxing to be staring at 24 30-foot high powered LED lights. Throw in whatever fancy technological terms you want, yellow lights, white lights, directionality, and angles. On or off, they bring a more urban feel, and no amount of landscaping hides that. And with the lights on from 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m., this destroys the sense of peace and sanctuary that my home gives me now. Lastly, I want to talk about the impact on my kids. My kids are in bed before 9:30 p.m., especially with early morning activities. And the lights don't just increase brightness, they bring more sound. As the school year progresses, daylight goes down, and so do the court sounds, which help my kids. Adding lights increases both brightness and noise distractions during homework time, which is huge for my kids, two of whom which have ADHD and are more sensitized to these. All five of our family members have bedrooms that face the courts. In the summer, my kids already struggle to fall asleep because of the play noise. Extending this to the school year impacts their sleep, their ability to focus, and their well-being. At bedtime, they should hear quiet, not pops and grunts and whoops and score calling and car door slamming and engine starting past 9:30 to 10 o'clock and beyond. It's not fair that the closest neighbors must carry the burden of every single day so that others can come once or twice a week for an hour of recreation. And my direct line of sight neighbors agree with me as signed in our petition, which will be shared with you tonight. Thank you.
Ethan Block.
Hi, I'm Ethan Block. I'm 12 years old. I live on 559 Jackson Avenue, and I'm here today to share my concerns about the proposed lighting at River Forest Tennis Club. By adding lights, it will make more bright and difficult for me to go to sleep and my siblings. On big days like testing and orchestra, which I attend to early 2 days a week, with the lights there until 9:30 p.m. and 6 a.m., I will not be able to get enough rest for some nights. There will be nothing I can do about it. But also with adding lights, that means players will still be on the courts late at night, and that comes with many things I cannot control. The grunting, the balls flying everywhere, the yelling, and while talking to each other. I don't want to wear uncomfortable headphones just to block out all that noise, because even then, I might not get the sleep I need. If I have a lot of homework or activities one day, and I stay up late trying to finish it, I will be severely limited in what I can focus on. Having ADHD already makes concentrating difficult, and staying up late only makes it worse with distractions. For example, one summer I was trying to complete a merit badge or cheat for scouts. The players on the courts were relatively quiet, but the noise from the balls hitting the fence was constant. Every time a player hits the ball, there's the sound of the racket hitting, then the ball bouncing, and sometimes the ball hitting the fence. Even louder noise because the fences are closer to the homes. This noise is even more distracting than the players themselves, especially because the courts are right next to the street and on our houses. I understand that the lights can be fun and provide more activities for some people, but those of us who aren't playing, the daily disruption could be huge, especially for the families living nearby. Thank you for your time.
Maureen O'Brien.
Hello. My husband, Kevin, and I have lived at 551 Jackson, right next to the blocks, for 11 years. We were really excited to come to River Forest and be part of the community. In all full disclosure, we are members of the tennis club and have been since 2017. In regards to the lights, we do not support lighting the tennis courts. We feel that the immediate neighbors are asked to carry the burden of the lights. We don't know that we would have moved here if we had a lit tennis court. We have two kids. Both their bedrooms face the tennis court. And I told my son about it. He goes, oh, that's okay. I'll just put my head under the pillow. In living where we live, we know that we have lights because we're right across from the church. I walk by the tennis club all the time. There are people there at 6 a.m. There are people there late. I just don't want to see this from my kitchen sink. I don't want to see my kids to have to hide their head in the pillow to go to sleep. So for that, I ask the committee to not make these immediate neighbors bear the burden of the tennis club having lights. Thank you.
Spencer Kirk.
Hi, I'm Spencer Kirk. Thank you for letting me speak. I am at 749 Jackson, so not across from the tennis club. I am across from the lights that have been spoken about at Roosevelt School. And when we moved in there, we saw and knew those lights were there. They have not distinctly negatively impacted my value of life or my experience there. I can also speak to the experience growing up at the tennis club, as well as being an active member there for the last several years. I do agree that there would be an expansion to the junior tennis during the day. In order to allow for that to happen, you would have to extend the adult play later at night. And so I see a value in those signs. I can reiterate other statements, but I don't think that that's worth our time. So thank you for your time.
David Lord. No. Okay. Dan Pullman.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm going to be very brief in the spirit of not being repetitive. Just add my voice to the previous voices, Mr. Hosiel. I hope I got that right. And our third speaker, I couldn't have said it better. Many of us, I think, in the direct neighbor, I've been a River Forest resident for 30 years. I live in the 500 block of Lathrop. Many of us who would be most directly affected by these changes, I think, are appropriately concerned about the change in the character of our neighborhood. And I think despite a very articulate presentation, thought out, and I mean that sincerely, I think in the end of the day, this still boils down to a private club expanding lights in the neighborhood that didn't have lights before. And that by definition really does change the character of the neighborhood. And I think you've heard from lots of the direct neighbors that just don't feel that that's the appropriate thing to do for lots of different reasons. As for the argument about the public good, I would respectfully suggest that it's a little bit disingenuous to suggest that improving services at a private club benefits the entire community. I really don't see it that way. And that's obviously just my opinion, but I think that should be stated. I also respectfully, I wasn't going to do this, but I respectfully am curious about the first statement, the legal statement that was made in terms of board members and being maybe tennis club members. And I'm curious if that's something that's made public and like, who are the decision makers in this? And does the public have the right to know how many may have a conflict of interest, even if there isn't a conflict of interest, maybe the perception of one. Thank you very much.
Steve Zoller.
I like the idea of lighting for a number of reasons. I like recreation. I like recreation for our community, for the families, for kids. It just seems like a good idea, especially where it's really costing us meaning the village. I've been in the village, my wife and I, for 40-some years. It's not costing us anything. I think this is a good idea. I know Oak Park has a lot of lighting. I see it. This is lighting that's being thrown down on the courts. We've had technical talk about it. We've also the negative things that people talk about, and I feel for them, and I think it's important that they tell us the negatives. But I live on Jackson, 527 Jackson. I can't imagine. I've lived there for 42 years with my wife. this is not like there's going to be 300 people getting out of a concert all at the same time. I think there's more traffic from the Jewel food store than there would be from the tennis club leaving the courts at whatever, a few people playing. So they've got concerns about traffic. There have been studies, and it sounded like there was minimal impact. I haven't made a study, but it doesn't seem like there would be an impact, but I don't know. I'll leave it for the studies. The other one is lighting. Frankly, it's been discussed that the street I live, it's a dark street. Anyway, I wouldn't mind if some little lighting came into the street, especially if it's minimal, because the street is dark, especially when there's foliage on the trees. And it seems like so minimal that I would be for the proposal. Thank you.
Gene Calabrese.
Jean Calabrese, I'm at 616 Lathrop, where I've been for almost 30 years. When we were considering purchasing, we did our research because we were concerned about living across the street from the tennis club. And in 1997, the club was open from April to October. There were no lights on the courts or the pool, and it was a dry club. Over the course of 28 plus years, we've seen the club push the boundaries on extending their season, lighting the pool at night, adding pickleball courts that are quite loud, serving alcohol, and now pushing to light their tennis courts yet again. This is not the first time. The tennis club has continued to express their desire to be a good neighbor, and I'd like to get at the heart of just exactly what does it mean to be a good neighbor. A good neighbor understands they are part of a residential community made up of families who generally expect quiet evenings. A good neighbor is mindful of the noise level of the events taking place on their property, especially when events take place in the evening hours. A good neighbor is mindful of parking with ample clearance space so all can get in and out of driveways safely. A good neighbor might use quiet pickleballs, there are such a thing, to keep the sound down on their courts. A good neighbor understands ecosystems and that everything is connected, including those who have a voice and so many more living organisms that cannot share their concerns here tonight. A good neighbor understands the meaning of light pollution and its harm to wildlife and ecosystems. Plants and animals depend on Earth's daily cycle of light and dark to manage their behaviors. There are birds that migrate or hunt at night, navigate by moonlight and starlight. These birds depend on cues from properly timed seasonal schedules. Insects are impacted by artificial lights when they are drawn to these light sources, which mess with their routines. Declining insect populations have negative impacts on all species that rely on insects for food and pollination, and I can go on and on. Why is it that the tennis club feels that the desire of a few should take priority over the well-being of a whole? And just out of curiosity, I'd like to know how many members of the tennis club live within 1,000 feet of the club, and what percentage of members live and pay taxes within the village of River Forest. And I'm hoping we can get that information. Thank you.
Demetha Bandera.
Hi, I'm Demetha Bandera, 703 Jackson Avenue. I live kitty corner to the tennis club on the northeast side. So I just wanted to, I've been living there for the past maybe 20 plus years. A few years back, we had Roosevelt Middle School's parking project. The reason I want to talk about it, the main goal was to build a parking lot where the current playground is. Due to the concerns of neighbors related to light pollution, traffic, and safety concerns, the parking lot was never built. So now we are here, little one block south of that same spot. I just want to repeat everything everybody has said. I mean, I would agree with that, almost all the comments that was made against the lighting project. But I also want to say, you know, I live next to the tennis court. I know a lot of people do drive there. I mean, despite some people do walk, some people do cycle, but most do drive because I see the traffic. All these vehicles will leave around 9:30 to 10 p.m. This will create issue for me and my family. I don't want headlights beaming in my living room nor in my bedroom. This is absolute annoyance. We already deal with some noise with the kids playing in the Roosevelt playground. but these kids mostly cycle or walk during night. And after all, they're kids. Therefore, I do not create a big problem nor impact. The difference with multiple cars leaving at night with headlights on is a different issue. The option to play at night that will create noise, light pollution, unwanted traffic, and disturb it'll disturb the tranquility that we enjoy in our neighborhood at night, like most people just said. That is our main concern. We just want to relax. We don't want, I mean, people playing tennis already make a lot of noises. I mean, there's effort. You know, they say the world's best sport. I mean, it takes effort. So you hear people grunting, balls hitting. And I mean, we hear some cuss words too, but not too much. Not too much. I can tolerate that. I'm an adult, but I don't know how that impacts kids. But if they're playing from 7 to 9:30, 2.5 hours, I mean, that's a lot of time. And that's a lot of time that we come home to decompress after a tough day of work. We want to sit down in our living room with our families. We don't want this noise. We don't want headlights beaming in our living rooms. The Development Review Board, which I'm assuming you guys are, right, should really consider the residential neighbors around the tennis court, as we are the ones that are negatively impacted by this. I can also see the value of our homes declining because of this, but I'm not a realtor, but I have to think that most people, including me, when we look for these, our homes, we look for an area that was without traffic, not much traffic, and without this light pollution issue. Now, I find it interesting, you know, every presentation was always about one or two courts lit up. Okay, if that's all that needs, let's say they're playing doubles, eight vehicles we can manage. But if it's 10 courts, worst case, it could be 40 cars. If they're playing doubles, everybody drives, that's the worst case. That's a lot of cars. And maybe the right answer, I don't know why the traffic study said there was no impact. If there are vehicles, there's going to be traffic. And also keep in mind, the Roosevelt kids do play around in that area. So at night, we have to think about their safety too. These kids are running around. They are not paying attention. So there is some concern related to their safety as well. So thank you for your time. I appreciate everybody coming here, expressing their opinions. You know, that's what a neighborhood is all about. Thank you.
Daniel Lauber.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the Development Review Board. I live at 7215 Oak, next door to McDonald's, which gives me some insights as to the effect of night lighting, which I will get to. I have been a professional city planner since 1972. I was a very precocious six-year-old, and a lawyer focused on zoning since 1985. I have served on the River Forest Zoning Board of Appeals, and I've got to say, I never would have imagined a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals being allowed to represent an applicant before the Zoning Board of Appeals. I knew while I was on that board, I could not do something like that. It was an incredibly inherent conflict of interest. And I am a little bit astounded that it has been permitted here today. The influence, it's at a minimum, the serious appearance of a conflict of interest. I want to address actually some factual things and start out by noting the words of the immortal philosopher Yogi Berra. This is deja vu all over again. The tennis club applied for lights back in 2012 and were denied. I also want to share this with you. Today is a cold day in hell because I agree with John Hosiel's report. He is a professional planner, and something that's sorely lacking from this application is any input from a professional planner. The applicant brags that and complains that they had to hire lawyers to write up their application. Well, that's what you do when you apply for a plan development. You hire attorneys, but you also hire planners who are actually qualified to voice an opinion as to whether the proposal will have an impact on the character of the neighborhood. Attorneys are not remotely qualified to do that. It's nowhere in their education. They have all of one course in real estate law where they're never even allowed to see a comprehensive plan or a zoning ordinance, which explains why court decisions are so bizarre when it comes to zoning. But I agree with John on just about everything he had to say. This does, by adding lighting here, alter the character of the neighborhood. Now, we live next to McDonald's on Harlem. They've been a very, very good neighbor under the current ownership. And when they rebuilt, they very kindly and responsively put up light shields. So we don't get a heck of a lot of light into our backyard. It's pretty darn dark. And we don't get any light shining in our windows. However, and I can guarantee this will happen if the tennis club is allowed to install these lights, we have plenty of, as they've been calling it, line of sight light. You look over the fence and it is bright as day, despite the shields. It is amazingly bright. That does alter the character. Now, we accepted that. We knew we were moving in next to McDonald's. There was going to be some light. The people living on Lathrop and Jackson did not count on that when they purchased their homes. They counted on a dark tennis club after dark. They did not count on the noise they will get from the tennis players. Now, we occasionally go by the tennis club on Harlem, and it gets noisy. It's not just the cussing. It's the tennis balls. They make noise. I think there definitely will be a negative impact on the neighborhood. The proposal, amazingly, is not consistent with the comprehensive plan. And plan developments under our ordinances are supposed to be consistent with the comprehensive plans. The applicant, which never addressed this during their application presentation tonight, ignored what their lawyers claimed to be their statement indicating compliance to the comprehensive plan, 4.0 in their application. And typical of it is they make these statements without backing it up with any evidence, without any expert opinion. It's all rhetoric. For example, they talk about strengthening property values and enhancing the quality of life. Now, let's not kid ourselves. Adding lights there is not going to enhance the quality of anybody's life except those exclusive few who belong to the tennis club and want to play at night and don't want to line up a keystone like every other citizen. But they make this assertion that there's a National Recreation and Parks Association study that claims property values by tennis and golf clubs are 15 to 30% higher. There's no citation to the study. There is nothing about the methodology. Now, I've done a study about the impacts of group homes for people with developmental disabilities on property values. It's complex. You have to take a certain time period before and after the group home opens to get the median home values, and you have to take a control neighborhood where there is no group home and compare the two. We don't know what methodology this organization used, but it's an organization representing tennis and golf clubs. So there could be a little question of some bias in how they did this. And I think that the claim that this will strengthen property values is absolutely unsupportable and very, very suspect. I can't quite figure out how this ensures the quality, stability, and attractiveness of residential neighborhoods. They claim this will elevate the attractiveness of the neighborhood. As a professional planner, I don't see how that's conceivable. There's nothing backing it up either. The burden is on the applicant to prove their assertions. The burden is on the applicant to show through expert testimony and exhibits that they comply with the comprehensive plan. They didn't do this at all. And I think it is incumbent from a professional planning standpoint that you rely on this and this application be denied. They claim this is going to do all sorts of great things to contribute immeasurably to the village's overall character, heritage, architectural diversity, identity, and sense of place. My question is, how is it going to do that? I can't figure that out. They say that they are going to plant trees that will reduce the light pollution as they grow, evergreens, in fact, and cut down the noise. Well, McDonald's planted evergreens along our property line. They have barely grown in 15 years. They certainly have had no effect on noise. We've got a bunch of trees we've planted on our side, and I can tell you they haven't affected the noise either, which hasn't been too bad, except during the summer when all the kids who, I guess, can't go to the tennis club to play at night come over to McDonald's and make a lot of noise and party. So maybe I should change my position and support you, get a little more quiet. It's illusional to think that these trees will have any effect on noise and light pollution. Roosevelt School, a number of years ago, covered their basketball court nets at night because of complaints from the neighbors about the noise. I don't know if they still cover them at night. Does anyone know? They don't. Good. So the light shielding is not going to do the trick. They also make an assumption that in their traffic study, they assume that the number of people coming to play tennis at night are going to really cut down on the number of cars because people will ride their bikes. Now, as anyone who's ever ridden a bike here in River Forest at night knows, that is a hazardous activity to do at night. And I've got very great doubts if they understand River Forest and how the lighting is so bad that it's very hazardous to ride a bike at night. It's going to be substantial traffic and be problems. Now, I've thought that, and some other people raised this, you could test this out, allow them to put lights on the two center courts and see what the effect is. That is one option. But allowing them to put the lights on all 10, it's delusional to think only one or two courts will be in use because, as the applicant has said, people, members of that club, are really fed up having to wait and not even get on the courts at Keystone. There's so much demand. So out of one side of their mouth, they're saying, oh, we may only have one or two courts at a time. The other side of their mouth, they're saying, there's so much demand from our members to play at night at Keystone. We need 10 courts lit up. It justifies logic. So I hope that you will have the prudence, even those of you who are members of the club, to risk possible social ostracization at the club by following the standards in our ordinance, by recognizing that the applicant has failed, absolutely failed, to prove their case and show that this proposal is in compliance with the comprehensive plan. The burden's on them. The burden is not on the people against this to show it doesn't comply with the plan. The burden was on the applicant to show that it complies with the plan, and they haven't done that at all. Thank you.
Paul Waters.
Thank you for this opportunity. The good news is this isn't a script. It's just my notes, and most of them have already been covered. So hopefully I'll be pretty brief. I'm going to start with a slight recap of what other people have said. You know, we've heard a lot about the children. And my heart goes out to the 281 future tennis stars that need additional playing time. But I'm a little selfish, and I think of my two children. And it's only two of them, but their bedtime's 8:30. And we're talking about 9:30 right across the street. I live on Oak and Lathrop, directly across from the tennis court. My first ask to this commission that if you do go forward, I would strongly consider looking at what that end time is to think about the families. If there is a compromise to be made, anything past 8:30 is a huge burden. Maybe not on the 281 children, but at least on my two children. The other piece I want to kind of cover and drill into a little bit more, and the prior speaker talked about it a little bit. We heard a lot about a lot of stuff I learned new today about photometrics and lumens. But I think the important part I want to hone in on is a line of sight. We heard earlier, is it fear of the lights that we're outraged out, or is there something real? So I want to talk about something real. Right now on the pool lights that are turned on until around 10 o'clock, they're 15 feet from my porch when I trim my bushes. My line of sight into one of those lights, I have to sit behind a pole when I talk to my wife, or I'm staring straight in the light. I don't complain. I bought the house that way. It was the deal I signed up for when I moved in. Talking about putting 30-foot lights and more than one or two without a proper study of what that means from a line of sight. We talked a lot about light bleed and lumens, but we haven't talked about when you look out of your window, like, what do you see? Do you have to wear your sunglasses at 9 o'clock just to look at the moon? So I'd also encourage this commission, as you start to look at the next steps and debate this, to think about some of the information that we are missing across what I think is a very important piece of the light question that I don't think was fully addressed by any type of study, only mentioned by the speakers in this room. And with that, all my other points have largely been covered by everybody else. So I'll let the meeting move along. Thank you for your time.
James Ford.
I'm not coming back. I'm just cutting.
Hi, I'm James Ford. I live on the 700 block of Monroe. And while not directly facing the River Forest Tennis Club, the light pollution will affect my time sitting on my front porch in the evening. Already, Roosevelt Middle School impacts it, but the River Forest Tennis Club will impact it also. If high school physics taught me anything, color is reflected light. And you're going to have 10 tennis courts that are lit up with, I don't know, 800 watts of power per tennis court per light times 12 lights. That's 240 lights times 800 watts. That's a lot of power, and it's all going to be reflected up, and it will impact the night sky. This is a private entity, and they will be a public nuisance for 80-plus minutes a day from May until August. And one more thing. I think anybody on this board who's a member of the tennis club and doesn't recuse themselves should quit. Thank you.
Carrie Palmer.
Hello, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm Carrie Palmer. I live at 611 Jackson, which directly faces the River Forest Tennis Club, mainly the south side court bank and the pool. And the proposal to add lights to these courts will fundamentally change my day-to-day lived experience as a River Forest resident, but not for the better. The proposal is asking neighbors and member of the public like me to make a huge sacrifice to my peace and comfort and ability to enjoy my home in service of benefit to a private members-only club. For this reason, it does not meet the standard for review, as we talked about at the beginning of this meeting. 48 lights, 24 poles, 30 feet tall each. No matter how great the technology is, how small the lumens, the foot candles, there's no way this kind of light won't impact us in the neighborhood every single night. Here's a little bit more about why it will affect my family. So I, like many of my neighbors, have little kids. Our daughter's bedroom window would essentially be right under or eye level to some of these lights. She goes to bed at 8:30, which is when members would still be playing on the fully lit courts. This would generate excessive noise. It would keep my family awake. We already live with the weekend parties. That's something that we signed up for when we bought the house. So we were aware of that. We don't complain. The fireworks was a new addition this season, so that was interesting. But we knew about this stuff when we moved in, so it's what it is. But I can say with 100% certainty that if there was nighttime court play in effect when we were looking to purchase our home, we would have not considered this property. And so I really think the property value stats, as we've discussed, these are general statistics from a source unknown, and they really don't account for the compressed areas that we're talking about here today. The height of the poles alone, unlit, is a total eyesore to me. It's a big concern. 30 feet is 3 times the height of the fence that goes around the courts. So, you know, I'm trying to sit on my front porch, enjoy dinner with my family, look at the sunset. I'm going to be looking at metal poles and LED fixtures. And instead of seeing a sunset, I'm going to look up and see white lights. So, like we talked about other lights in the area, these are not charming twinkle lights on the front steps of the church. They're not the safety street lights that have to exist. It doesn't mean that because those things exist, that these lights are okay, in my opinion. Another neighbor and I managed to connect with most of the neighbors who we talked about being kind of line of sight with the tennis club. And this chart kind of represents those that have concerns about the proposal. So in the red shaded grid, you'll see the households that are opposed to this proposal to add lights. So I'll provide this to the administration, but essentially not one person would acknowledge support of the proposal. There were a few who had no opinion and a few who were unreachable, but as you can see here, just visually, the neighbors would be highly impacted and we are against this proposal. By the way, this is 15 households and our petition has 26 signatures. From folks in those households. So we're placing our trust in the members of the DRB here today to fairly evaluate this proposal, regardless of your RFTC affiliation. If it were me, I'm a people pleaser. I'm already nervous standing up here because I too have friends at the tennis club and I don't want them to not like me. So I ask you to put that social pressure aside if you can and evaluate the proposal fairly. And then I'm a racket person myself. I love tennis. I love pickleball. That's a lie. I don't love pickleball. I would just encourage, you know, if this continues to be an issue about getting court time, what can we do in collaboration with the River Forest Park District? Is there, you know, collaboration even with the, I don't know their status of like availability to the public, but the Oak Park Tennis Club or Tennis Center, the one right by McDonald's, I believe they have court time that is available to the public as well. So there's plenty of courts. It's just maybe a matter of communication and coordination and working together to make sure that everyone who wants to play can. And that's all I'll say. Thank you for your time.
Bradley Palmer.
All right, Brad Palmer, thank you for having us and letting us have a comment. 611 Jackson, where Carrie just spoke from. I'll just add my personal comment that if this initiative passes, it would really sadden me for most of the reasons that Hausiel provided you, the 26-year expert in planning. And it would sadden me if it passes because I want to enjoy those sunsets on my front. It's my wife and children. Unencumbered by the character and intensity altering changes that would be made. You can say it's not a zoning change, it's not this, and we're doing that. At the end of the day, you're changing the character. You're encumbering those neighbors, of which we have almost every single one of those bordering properties signing saying, don't go forward with this. Okay? Simple. For what? 283 families? I'm sorry, it's great. We love the tennis club. We love the tennis club members. We love their parties that go too late and that keep my daughter up. But you know what? And by the way, people do complain. I've called the police twice for noise violations. But we won't bring that up today in today's meeting. But at the end of the day, I don't know how many people live here. I think it's 11,000. That's what the sign says. Maybe it's different. But you're going to make that decision for 283 people. and our families. And this gentleman here said with 26 years of experience that you hired, it's dramatically going to alter the character of our neighborhood. This is, you know, I should rest my case. The last I'll just finish up with, I just feel that if there's any, you guys can talk technicalities on light, and we had someone from the IES or IEC board speak and say that what they put in the proposal didn't meet the standards that they said they were meeting. So how can we trust what one private entity wants to do and claim all these things for the public good? My daughter has taken lessons there in the pool and in the tennis. That's great. It has nothing to do with the lights. The last thing I'll say is I like to golf. I didn't move to River Forest to golf, okay, because I know there's no golf courses within 20, publicly playable golf courses within 25 minutes, right? But I don't think it should be on a private entity to state that, oh, there's a problem in our town for access to athletic facilities, and therefore we're going to alter and change the character of the neighborhood as a result of that. And I agree with my wife. Let's collaborate and find more spaces for those kids to play. I have to drive my kid 35 minutes away to golf because that's what I choose to do, but I'm not looking for the village to provide that for me, right? And that's what these folks are doing, right? These folks are asking their fellow neighbors to bear this burden, another comment said, and I just categorically disagree with that. And I think if you want to find time to play, you know, hire a nanny that stays a little later so that you can go and play, or drive your kid 35 minutes to go play somewhere where they have access. Same thing I do for the sport that I choose for my, or that my kid wants to play, or it happens to be talented at, or whatever the case may be. But there's lots of sports and there's lots of places you can take your kids that doesn't have to be encumbering on your neighbors. So thank you for the time, and I hope you can feel it is from the heart. We moved from River Forest to River Forest to be in a better spot in this neighborhood. And I jogged around the club the other night, and I was like, I actually like jogging around this club. And I know, and that was at 9 p.m. And I didn't do it because this meeting was coming up. I'm training for a race. And I actually tripped right in front of the tennis club, which we can talk to the review board about the sidewalk being uneven, but I digress. But what I mean to say is several neighbors said hi to me on my run, and I like the physical appearance of the club. It's pleasing. And so this isn't a referendum on the club. It's not. But at the end of the day, on my jog, it's going to be different if you allow this to happen. So thank you.
Peter Dorley?
Dorley, yep. Live at 607 Jackson Avenue. Good evening. So right across from the tennis club, really been there almost all my life. My wife and Karen raised our family there, and we enjoyed being members of the tennis club for over 20 years and you know, enjoyed the sense of community that it brought to the neighborhood and loved living next to the tennis club. But the big concern is with the change with lighting. It's not a fear, but it's kind of repeating a little bit here, probably less, but it's the impact on the character of neighborhood, the attractiveness, lack of the lighting up a block idea, and with the courts being, you know, right up against the property line, especially on Jackson where the residences are, there is an impact and heard tonight that really that it's probably going to exceed what we heard initially in the proposal as far as the foot candles, you know, measured at the sidewalk. It's good to know that the pool lights have been addressed. This meeting back in 2012, wherever it was brought up then that, hey, the pool lights are a problem. And the tennis club said, hey, yeah, we're going to look at that. We'll deal with that. But it really took until now for that to get addressed. And I think when I think back, that's not a good neighbor. That should have been done earlier. And I understand that maybe it's not even the effectiveness is not finished yet, and there may be some adjustments been made. We have a vacation home in Wisconsin, which we support a bring back the dark night sky initiative, and it really is a big deal up there. And I think in River Forest here, it's not just the immediate neighbors that are concerned with this, but other villages are concerned with, you know, lighting up basically a village block. So it's certainly a different deal than what we have at Keystone, which is set back. It's a different situation than we have in River Forest with the tennis club so close to the homes. And I personally hope for the success of the club. I like the club. It been here all my life, but I think that this lighting is just a bit over the top. Also, a bit of concern about the makeup of the board, and I hope, as I just heard previously, that the board will take this into consideration for what you've heard tonight. And at the same time, I realize that, hey, you're if you're a tennis club member, there's pressure there. But from what I heard tonight, the impact of this will affect a lot of people, and it needs to be seriously considered and discussed. Thank you.
John Lawrence.
Good evening, everyone. My name is John Lawrence. I'm a lifetime River Forester. I'm at 522 Jackson. I've been there since 2010, but my family's owned the house since 1976 or so. And in full disclosure, I am an RFTC member. Obviously, I take my neighbors' concerns seriously about light pollution and noise and congestion. But from my perspective, we do have a lot of members who do walk and bike. These are people who are, looking to be in good shape. They're athletes. They're at least trying to be athletes. So it's really not uncommon for people to be taking, alternate modes of transportation to get to the club. And there's even at the busiest, there will be a lot of people coming and going, but it's not going to be all at once. It's not like every court time starts at 8 and then ends at 9 and we have 40 people in and 40 people out. People will maybe carpool with their neighbors who are coming to the club. And oftentimes it's couples playing together. So if they are driving, there may be one car for two or even four people. So I have to trust the experts too when it comes to the the traffic studies. They know a lot more than, I do. And if they don't feel there's a material change, then I'm going to trust that. We're also next to three of our busiest local thoroughfares in Lake Street, Chicago Avenue, and Lathrop. There's going to be traffic at all sorts of hours and times. That is never going to change. That's just part of the neighborhood. As well as the noise, River Forest is fairly quiet, but, let's not pretend that there's not noise. I've got a 13-year-old kid. She and her friends are out in the yard. They're making noise. They're running around. They're doing what kids do. Half of the block seems to have dogs. They're out. They're barking. So we're not living in some perfectly silent, retreat. There is noise. We are in an urban suburb. Tennis is not a super loud sport. I mean, there will be some noise, but it's a soft tennis ball bouncing on a soft court. A lot of talking of grunting. We do have a few members who think they're at the US Open, but for the most part, I'm not saying that everybody's out there making tons and tons of noise on the court. The club is trying to be respectful of the neighbors. We're trying to come up with ways to mitigate the light, mitigate the sound, the landscaping, the light shield on the windscreens to prevent spillage. I think all of those things show good faith by the tennis club. So, I'm hoping that you guys will consider this. We've seen lots of light at First Pres, at Roosevelt, at Jewel along Lake Street. So keep all of that in mind. Thank you.
John Vandemore. Okay. Paul Harding.
Well, thank you for an opportunity to participate in a public hearing about something that's so important. In terms of public versus private, this is a private organization that's been private for 125 years. And now to say that we're going to do all these public things that it's not like real. I mean, they're not obligated to do it. You could have a new regime come in there and change all that. It's not public. They're private. In terms of the glare, if you look at that light, if you look at that photograph at the top there, you see six lights. What they're proposing is 48 lights, like eight times the number of lights. I'm an architect, and I know what that's going to look like. It's going to look like this field of light sources that take up a city block. It's going to be, it's a terrible change to the neighborhood. They're already a burden to the neighbors. They have loud parties that exceed the noise levels that are permitted. They blow by the ordinance that says it's got to be over by 10 o'clock, whatever. They're just a burden. And now you want them to be a bigger burden? It's not right. At some point, it's not right. That's got to count for something. And then the other thing that's a concern is that this sets a terrible precedent for the village. If this is allowed to go through, are you going to let them put lights all over the park next to the library and the school? It sets a terrible precedent. You get this legal thing, lawyers, they're great at referring back to precedents. Well, here's a precedent. We're going to follow that precedent. We're going to put lights all over the park. And then the other thing is, speaking of lawyers, you know, this is kind of a really contentious time for national politics. And it's like you get up in the morning and every day there's some preposterous idea out there that's rationalized by lawyers. It's terrible. And when I come here and hear a lawyer say that there are members of the tennis club that are going to be voting on this and that we should all be aware of it, and we should accept it. No, I don't accept it. And I don't think most people in the village accept it. It's just not right. Even if you get a lawyer to rationalize it, it's not right. The people that are members of the general public that have faith in the government of River Forest, we're just getting screwed, and it's not right. We don't like it, and please don't do it. It shouldn't have even been brought up. Those people should have just recused themselves automatically. And then when you see a person that's making the presentation sitting here as a member of the board, that's not right. He shouldn't have. He knew this was going to come up. Why is he on this board? Why did you let him on this board? Thank you.
Dan Baker. Okay. Jonathan Kirk.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Kirk. No relation to Spencer. I'll be brief. I live at 608 Lathrop. It's right across the street. I'm 1,000 feet. We have three children. We love living in the neighborhood. Everything that's been spoken here tonight, I agree with. I'm opposed to the lights. Jean's garden, two houses down from me, is beautiful. It's great. It adds to the aesthetic of the neighborhood. So I'll just offer my support of let's try to maintain the aesthetics of River Forest. It's a historical landmark. It's an architectural landmark. I'm afraid by putting 24 giant 30-foot poles into that property will make it look industrial in scale, and at worst, it would look something like a strip mall parking lot. So I'm opposed to it. I understand I'm sympathetic to wanting to play tennis late at night, but I would say it's probably just a bridge too far. Thank you.
Sean Vitale.
So the good news is I'm pretty sure I'm towards the end of the list because I feel like I signed up last. I'll be really brief. My name is Sean Vitale. I've proudly called River Forest home since 2020. When I first moved to 632 Lathrop, which is directly across the street from the tennis club, I'll admit I had some initial concerns about the traffic and the noise, given the proximity to the club, the library, the several churches. But honestly, those concerns quickly gave way to a deep appreciation for the vibrant, close-knit community that defines our neighborhood, River Forest. River Forest thrives on connection. From school events and block parties to sports and holiday gatherings, this is a place where people come together. That's why I believe adding lights to the River Forest Tennis Club is not a practical upgrade. It's a meaningful investment in our community. Evening access to the courts would allow more residents, especially working adults and families, time to enjoy the space and stay active. It would extend the hours during which neighbors can connect, play, and build relationships, all of which are core to the spirit of River Forest. I understand that concerns may arise from noise and lighting. I remember similar conversations when the pickleball courts were installed. Having lived directly across the street with my home facing Lathrop and my kids' windows facing Lathrop, I can confidently say that the ambient noise from nearby institutions far exceeded any of the recreational noise from the tennis club itself. I was never once disturbed by pickleball or any activity from the tennis club at the time I lived there. Installing lights at RFTC is a low impact, high value enhancement. It supports health, recreation, and community engagement without disrupting the peace of the neighborhood. I fully support this initiative and encourage others to see it not just as a facility upgrade, but as a way to strengthen our town. Thank you.
Sold his house to me before
they
sold the tennis club line. So we look at 632 Lathrop for the vote. Like, I have the vote.
Okay, so that was the last. All right, so that was the last name on our list, but I want to just ask, is there anyone else here that would like to speak that did not sign up earlier? Or that was, are we good? It's everyone? Okay, so that would conclude the public portion of our meeting. Okay, so that's officially closed. And now it's a time for us to discuss, deliberate, and make a recommendation. In the past, we've always stuck with the rule that 10 o'clock is our cutoff point.
Yeah.
Okay. Out of respect to the staff and everyone here. And also, I think it's helpful to not rush things and think logically and not be tired while we think through these things. I would like to suggest that we continue this at our next meeting where we have a quorum. Mm-hmm. That would be I believe November 20th. Is that right, Ms. Spencer? Okay. Do we want to see if we have a quorum at this time to then put that on the books? Okay. So if you all could check your calendars and see if you were in town. I got to look right now, actually. I'm pretty sure I can do this. Yes, I will be here. Who else?
Yeah. Yes, I'll be here.
Oh. No?
I don't think I would be here.
I will not be here.
I would be here.
You'd be here. And no quorum.
I would be prepared to vote tonight if we wanted to move forward. I'm not suggesting we do, but I'm prepared to vote. I don't think we need to have another, for my benefit, I don't need to have another meeting or more time to deliberate.
Okay. Well, does, I guess the next time would then be pushed into December, correct? December 4th. Okay. Well, what does everyone else think on the committee as far as your what I want to be sure that you have all the information that you need and that this is a time where you can process it and make a sound decision. So yeah. I will leave that to you to tell me if you would like to proceed this evening.
Okay. I mean, my feeling is I would like to have more time and go over this very extensive presentations by,
okay,
you know, River Forest Tennis Club and then all the people that were spent the evening here to give their opinions.
Sounds good. Then we're going to go into December then, which would be December. What's the date on that? Fourth?
First Thursday.
I am available.
I'm available.
Not sure. I'd have to look.
Okay.
I'm available.
I don't know.
So 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a quorum? Okay. Then that's what we'll do. Well, do we have to have a motion and second that, or how should we handle this?
Yes, you would solicit a motion to continue to a date certain, that date being December 4th at 7:30 p.m.
Okay, is there a motion?
I so move.
Second.
Okay. All roll.
Calling the roll for the motion to continue the meeting to a date certain of December 4th. Chairman Crosby?
Yes.
Ms. Davis?
Yes.
Ms. Fishman?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese? Ms. McColl?
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Yes.
Okay. Then we just a motion to adjourn?
Well, we technically didn't move public participation, so we still need to call for non-public participation not really up to the hearing.
Oh, yes. I thought
we did that at the beginning.
We didn't actually adjust the agenda. We just pulled to see if there was any reason to adjust the agenda. So it's still, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. No, let's be technical.
The agenda for now. So just announce it. I don't think there's anyone here not related to the tennis club.
All right. So this is the public portion. If there's any comment unrelated to the tennis club.
Point of order. Will there be public comment at December 4th before your...
There will not. We've closed that. That was addressed at the beginning of the meeting. It has not changed. Okay. All right. Any public comment unrelated to the tennis club? Not related to the tennis club. Okay. Then we're going to close that portion. Okay. And then we need a motion to adjourn.
Oh, can I ask a question? So are we only going to deliberate on December 4th? Because for me, part of this analysis turns on the discrepancy between Hauziel's foot candle analysis and Mr. Yanaki's foot candle analysis. So they're pretty far apart. Can they reconcile that and provide new information before the meeting? Or is that kind of done?
If we're just... ask them now, if that's information that you'd like to see submitted, you can ask them to do so between now and then. In addition, during your deliberations, you, the board, are allowed to ask questions.
Okay.
So I assume that a representative of the commissioner at the village will be available to answer your questions during the deliberations.
Okay, thank you.
So yeah, but if you know there's information that you need to expand on, then she should be asking at this time. Then that would
yes, if we can resolve that before, or just kind of come to an agreement on the foot candle analysis before December 4th, that would be useful.
I guess just for point of order that it would be moving off the numbers would be the applicant would have to propose changes to their board of record. Like our numbers are correct per their board of record plan. So they weren't calling into question the numbers we gave as accurate. They were calling into question the consistency of application of that standard throughout the village historically now. So the standards are contested as being accurate. The foot candle at the property line. The applicant gave was the foot candle at the street, which is not the property. So, in order to come back with a resolution of that, our resistance of change is the village's position. We have to see the applicant's willingness to change the board of efforts to reduce spill. So,
Okay, understood.
Okay. All right, then may I please have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
Second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight.